This is episode 717 of the SML Podcast. Given that your friendly neighborhood announcer is from the Seattle area and thinks Boeing is pretty cool, we're going to talk about the Boeing 717 for a minute. Because Airbus can suck it. In order to add some legitimacy to our lecture, we're bringing in some pretentious toolshed named Reginald to bore you to tears with information you could not possibly care less about. Don't skip. I am watching you.
The Boeing 717 is a twin-engine, single-aisle jet liner developed for the 100-seat market and announced in June of 1991. Available for sale in 1994. It could seat a maximum of 134 passengers and had a range of 3,820 nautical kilometers, which for you Yankees converts to more miles than you'd want to drive in a day. You lazy bastards. Boeing once marketed the 717 as the full-size airplane for the regional market. With a top speed of 811 kilometers per hour, it could take you from Seattle to Portland before you could even think of getting out of your seat to defile the lavatory. Boeing offered the 717-200 100-seater to customers at a selling price of between $22.5 million and $24 million. So if you had a couple dozen million dollars burning a hole in your trousers, that could have potentially been the midlife crisis purchase you were looking for. Sadly, production of this model ceased in May of 2006 after 156 total were built. As of July 2018, 148 of those are still in service, probably making them a collector's item you could flip for a handy profit on the eBay. If you happen to find yourself lying on one at some point, always remember that any landing you can walk away from is a good landing. Carry on, then.
You skipped, didn't you? I warned you about that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast. We got some friends here hanging out. Tim Ekibis will be here later on in the show, and we'll do reviews then. But for now, Brunel and Chris are both here. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Just like I said earlier, I had myself a bit of breakfast that resulted in me still being
hungry.
Doesn't
matter. Doesn't matter, Brunel. We have company. I'm trying to get to the... Chris, how are you doing? There, that's the kind of answer we need. Chris knows what's going on.
Where it's like, how do you feel? And so everyone's like, good. And it's like, okay, that's good. But the moment you're like, it's been a day. Like, fuck.
No. I don't care that much. You know what I do care about? David Ventura of Ichigo Ichie is back on the show. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing just dandy. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Welcome back. It's been a couple of months since you've been on. Root Beer is my jam in chat said that we are starting to question your taste by coming on our show again. So what brings you back? How's things going?
Give him a really good answer.
He's not going to cut me off if I have to get like two words into it. I'm fine. I'm doing fantastic. There's so much stuff going on. The Steam Next Fest is dropping this weekend, actually coming up. And we have a brand new demo launch and tied Ooh. Together with that. So I'm thrilled.
What is the Steam Next Fest?
So they had like festivals that they did several times a year where they want to highlight games that are planning to come out on the Steam platform, and they give the developers that have the demos a chance to shine and raise them up above the normal noise level of all the other games that are coming out. And I think they did them seasonally, but now they call them the Steam Next Fest is what this one is called, which before would be called like the Steam Autumn Festival. So all the games that are planning on launching between I think October and like March of next year are eligible to jump on board here. And then, you know, you have a demo and that gets pushed up a little bit. And it's all about celebrating all these indie developers that are coming out with the new games. And we'll be doing live streams and talking about how the game design is and the graphics and showing it off and answering questions, doing AMAs and things like that. So it's a lot of really nice, fun events and ways to connect with the community that are excited about these new indie games that are coming out in the next two quarters.
Nice. And presumably that means one of those upcoming indie games is yours.
It is. Indeed, it is.
That was a good guess, wasn't it?
Yeah. You've been reading your Cliff Notes, I can tell.
I try. Tell us all about what is going on. The game is Backbeat. Tell us about it.
Yes. So Backbeat is
this is a word game on the street that the fire. Yes. I'm sorry.
That's right. Wow. And then that's apt because didn't What's a Story Morning Glory come out in 95, I think, is the year that album was released. And that's the year that our game takes place, actually. So Backbeat is a musical funk strategy puzzle game where you manipulate four threads of time. And it takes place in 1995 in suburban Washington, D.C.,
I love the website for this game. I know I mentioned it last time you were on the show, but I just love that the webpage is straight out of the 90s.
It's perfectly compatible with Internet Explorer 3.0, or at least it looks like it tries to be, but that was our goal. And building it to the era when dial-up was changing to ISDN, and you know, you would hear those lovely modem sounds when you were getting on your internet.
Do you have any modem sounds in Backbeat?
We don't yet, but we do have some speed dial and call waiting sounds. And when's the last time you actually heard call waiting? Because we've had cell phones for so long.
Oh, wow. But, call waiting.
But the lead character...
I was going to say, I also love that there's a reference to pan and scan.
Exactly. When they're in the video store, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the characters, Josh, he works in Hollywood movies, which is a homage to two giant big box video stores, which you could probably figure out from the 90s. And I actually worked in a Blockbuster video when I was a teenager in high school. So that's those moments of being chased down by people asking why we don't have any more copies of Waterworld is still too present in my memory.
I'm surprised that the one that was drawing attention was like Waterworld. People were asking.
Like they were just like, they would hang up. They would like line up outside of the booth, you know, where the tapes come back in. They'd like, some of the super customers would hang over the edge and they'd be like, so what you got in there? Like, I don't know. I haven't opened it yet. You got any Waterworld? I'm like,
I'm just having this hard time perceiving Waterworld as like one of the films that people like lost their shit over returning to the stores. Like, is it back yet? The
idea
covered by water intrigues me.
But Pernell, where did you grow up? Or is it more of an urban area? Or?
Oh, definitely an urban area. But I mean, this area there's a suburban aspect. The only thing we don't really have is like rural. Like, there's no, like, the chicken farms are further south. So,
yeah.
Suburban and
the chicken urban. Farms was Cole's expertise, but she's not here anymore. So
I have chicken farm, but they're too far for me to be an expert. So that means that we had a little bit of multiple taste here. I mean, like, you had Tales from the Hood, people wanted that, but you also had people who had a taste for first dates. I mean,
right.
My area, it was all about Titanic. Everybody needed Titanic.
I feel like Titanic.
Titanic was huge. We had like a whole wall dedicated to Titanic. I remember that. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I know. It's amazing. People are like, I'm enamored by the film about these people dying on a boat. But this love story, like, he
Kate
died.
Winslet was fine in that movie. we have a rinky little shit town movie theater here that, like, they would get one movie in at a time. We only have one screen, and it would only ever be for 1 week at a time. Titanic was in for 3 months straight.
Damn, he wanted that money.
It was constantly selling out the theater. Everyone just went nuts for Titanic in my area.
Yeah, I think my girlfriend went to the theater to see it 5 times at least. When, you know, it's I can't imagine how much money she invested into seeing that film.
I can't imagine seeing a movie more than like twice the most, especially paying full theater price. Like, oh my god, here comes the part where he dies. This is the part that makes me sad. I can't wait. Like, I can't. And that movie, like, I know, but I mean, like, at this point, like, that was a film that transcended, like, no matter where you came from, that and, like, The Notebook. Like, everybody and their mom loved those films, regardless of where they were from, like, what region you were in, and all that.
I never watched The Notebook.
Oh, I'm not saying I watched it and liked it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you are. I heard you say that explicitly.
He's got a poster over his bed.
Me and my date, what were you watching when you were? A Notebook, you motherfucker, do you not know that shit? Stories.
Purnell's watching The Notebook. Meanwhile, I wore out my VHS copy of South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Yeah, I had the Garbage Pail Kids movie. That was my shtick, and I'm not ashamed of it, despite the movie actually being quite bad. I still watched it quite a bit.
Wasn't that 80s? You're like jumping back another decade.
And that just goes to show you, I didn't care. I watched it. But as far as like 90s films go, I can't even recall one. I mean, like, maybe it's too young because it's like early 90s, but I'm like, maybe the Turtles' second movie I watched a lot in the 90s. But not
that,
the third.
That movie was everywhere in the 90s.
Yes, it was.
Ninja Rap.
That's right. And this game is a, like, it's, I mean,
is Vanilla Ice reference in your game?
Vanilla Ice is not in the game. But
you should get Vanilla Ice in your game. He's probably available.
He was long gone by 95.
Chris has gotten to the video level. Joe, have you gotten to the video store level yet?
I have not. I am stuck in the house.
You're still in the house.
I'm trying. I can't get the goddamn drummer to go in the back room.
And it's after the video store.
Well, that's after the video store. So you've been to the video store.
Oh, well, yeah, we talked in the video store. Yeah, I didn't.
Like Joe brought it up. He asked, he's like, what'd you think of the demo? And I was like, I'm kind of ashamed to even mention it on the show, but I'm gonna, because I want to keep playing and get to more of the game's features. But I actually somehow got stuck at the same place Joe did. Like,
can't get the drummer in the door.
Yeah, the thing about it is, like, I get the idea that, you know, everybody moves to a different time, and we'll discuss, you know, like, the actual mechanics in a few, but now I want to drill down to the shit. Everybody moves to a different time, and I got the time for the first two, you know, Toshi and Watt, but with Josh, he always stops when he bumps into something, but if the people are by, he doesn't bump into them, they just stop, like, he can't move, but there was, like, one random instance where I did get him to stop, and I don't know what triggered it. And then the last thing was, I found one route that seemed to do the trick, but I always needed one more measure to pull it off, and I couldn't do it. So,
That's interesting. That's great feedback. Is this the first? So there's two levels back to back inside the house with Josh. There's one where they're going to the garage, and one where they're going back to the bedroom. Is it the second one where you got stuck?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're back to the bedroom.
Going back to the bedroom.
If you, I mean, it's your game, so you probably know if I explain it like this. Like, I had it when he was going up from the drum set, left to the door, and then through the door, and then the best route I came up with was, like, lead him up to, like, that chair set where he goes around one chair, and then he goes across and down, but he needs one more measure to go from the room back to go into the bedroom. Like, what am I missing?
Yeah. Okay, so you figured out about the loop around the TV set.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well then I think you're almost, you're almost there. You probably just need to head south a bit faster than you are, perhaps.
Okay, yeah, because I know I had to stop on a dime for one of them, because it was like, okay, he was crossing into the path of, like, the dad. I was like, okay, well, stop here, and that was what lost me the last measure that I needed to keep going. And I'm like, God, we're going to have this interview, and it's like, oh, I'm sure it's like skill systems or something that might pop up later, and I haven't even seen it, because I can't get the damn bedroom with the drummer.
That's okay. Okay, this is great. This is great feedback. This helps a lot.
Now I know that I need to do something with the TV at least. So I'll try figuring it out from there.
Well, I'm going to break it to you, Joe. Actually, okay. I didn't make the levels. One of our junior level designers did. And the level that we're all talking about right now, I couldn't figure out it at all.
Really?
but other people in the office could. So then we're like, okay, is this too hard? Or is this too, you know, what should we do about this? And we're like, well, let's just see. Let's roll with this for now and see how many people get stuck here and see if we should make it a bit easier or not. But like, once you know the solution, that's the thing with puzzle games, is like, oh, okay, like, oh, duh, kind of thing like that. But until you get to that point, then it's, yeah, I understand completely. So I had a hard time with that level too.
I figured I was just dumb because even on like the very first level where you got to walk the two people out the door, I didn't realize for a long time that there was a second door the other person's got to go through. For so long, I was just trying to reroute them around and try. It's like, how the fuck do I get through that front door? I could get the first person out and they're playing, they're jamming, everything's good. That was simple. Why can't I figure out how to get this other person through the door? And I just never saw that back door until it was way too late, and it was really embarrassing.
Well, that's a game, Joe.
Now you could have kept that shit secret, like, yo, man.
I could have kept it secret, but that wouldn't make for a good show.
What about you, Chris? Chris, did you get all the way to level 6 to the bar?
Mm-mm. I was doing just fine, though. I just got interrupted by a podcast.
Oh, okay.
So is the bar, like the bar that you're mentioning, was that the last level, like that is on the demo?
That's the last level demo, yeah. Exactly. They're talking about playing the gig in the dive bar. Exactly.
Right on. Yeah, I was just at the one with Josh and like was still moving Toshi, and then that's when the phone started ringing. my big giant portable phone.
Toshi.
Exactly, the Zach Morris form.
Yeah. I love how big it is in the game too. It's like half the size.
It's the size of her guitar, basically.
Of her bass.
This is really messing with me. Like the loop around the TV. I'm like, cause I'm playing it right the hell now because I want to. And like, it's just giving me grief. It's like, okay, you can't do that because if you do, you bump into the dad again. It's like the same damn problem. It's like, they what?
I love that Purnell's going to spend the whole show just trying to figure this out.
It's going to happen. Because it's like, I play puzzle games. I shouldn't have this difficulty. Because like, it's the same thing. It's like, you'd go down, you'd bump into the boxes, and then you'd go into the door. But you can't because I'm out of measures.
You play puzzle games, you say, but have you played Sokoban-style ones? The ones where you, like, yeah. You know, the guy, you're sliding around inside of a warehouse?
Oh, yeah. And, like, okay. Warehouse, I play all that stuff.
Okay.
Like, I love it. Honestly, like, if you give me a puzzle game, I am happy to try. That's what I like to do. It's just every once in a while, like, and I'll beat my head into the wall until I get it right. It's just, you got to actually get it right at some point. You don't, you're like, well, fuck. Cause like, like the TV thing, even, it's like, I get it. It's like, it takes like, let me see. I'm going to say it right now on the air. Joe can just cut it out if he's like, this isn't quality entertainment. Fuck it. He's the editor. So it's like one up from the drums, two over to the box. Three up into the room, four up to the vase, right to the chair, right to that, bump into the dad's. You got to put your hole. You hold right again and go right. Can't go down to the box to stop yourself because the dad again. If you go right, you're one off from the box that you need to stop on to end the level. So it's like, what the jub is going on? That's why Chris is like, I got interrupted by a podcast. Like, trust us, Chris. If you weren't interrupted by the podcast, you'd be on the same damn part.
We'll revisit this on Tuesday.
Oh, we will.
Let's see how stuck I got.
Tuesday, you mean on a completely separate day? No, we don't do that. Oh, this whole show happens in one live take.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Silly. I'll see you in like 30 minutes.
Yeah. Tim's just not on the call yet. It's not that it's a different day. He's just not here yet.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So I've been ruminating about my own like inability to do well at this game for a few minutes now. But one thing I want to ask, and I have to know that the demo ends like a level or two after this, is so. Well, I guess the first thing before I even ask the question for the listeners, give a bit of a description on the gameplay that we're all arguing about right now. For the player.
Oh, we haven't described the game, have we?
No, I guess not. It's a mashup between a Sokoban style game and a turn-based tactics game. So you have a limited number of turns to move your four characters collectively through an environment to a goal area. And the some of the unique points about it are you can rewind your turns as much as you want. And all of the characters move on separate threads of time. So you synchronize how some characters move with what other characters are doing at different points in time. So someone needs to be at one place to set another person up to get through some kind of obstacle. And that's the dynamic kind of stuff that you run into later in the game outside of the scope of the demo. But these four threads of time and the four different members of your band, you can think about them as kind of like chess pieces because they all move in different ways. So Watts and Toshi are like bishops in the sense that they move the same way, but they're on different grid cells, like black and white squares. So the places they can reach are uniquely different. And that's one of the first puzzles that Joe talked about having a little difficulty wrapping his head around, is that there were two different ways to get the people out, and it's because they are on different tiles. And that's what that level is supposed to teach. And the drummer works in a Sokoban style. So he kind of runs to whatever until he hits a wall or he hits an object, then he stops there. So that's his movement thing. And then later in the full version, there's another character, a saxophone player, that you get to too. And so you take these four characters, you move them through the environment, and you have to work together to solve these puzzles. Some of which are static, some are dynamic, like guards. And then later, there's things you can interact with, like opening like switch plates and keys and doors and stuff like that. And then there's power moves. This is where the tactical part comes in, where you have a limited number of times that you can use power moves to kind of maybe slide through a guard. Toshi has a power slide, so he does like a the Who kind of thing, gets on his knees and just like goes right by one of the guards without being blocked by them. And the bass player has a walking bass where she can kind of tiptoe through narrow areas and stuff like that. So those power moves are used at certain points of time and have to be rare. And then on top of all this, we add in these musical metrics, which is the thing that you get the first taste of in level 6 at the bar. And that's about resource rules that control how you can move through space becomes important, and when you move becomes important. So it's not just making it through it in a physical sense, in a time-based sense. It becomes very important when you turn and when you stop and when you move forward. And that's what gives you the ultimate, the big score and all the points, and unlocks all of the stuff that moves things forward.
See, yeah, I mean, thinking you will say, yeah, unlock. I'm like, well, unlock? What, is there things you earn, like new songs? Or?
Oh, there's tons of stuff. You got no idea, Purnell.
See, the power. I'm still stuck on the TV. Like, I'm going to be here like fucking 10 o'clock at night. Like, still bumping into Dad. Get the fuck out the way, Dad.
I can't wait till Purnell's like emailing me in the middle of the night. You got to give me David's contact information. I can't figure this fucking thing out.
Or we're thinking about setting up like a 900 number hint line, like Nintendo.
Classic.
You call us up, and then we charge you like $275 a minute, and we'll tell you what the solutions are.
It's like, what's the number? 2553701.
Yeah, I normally get to puzzle games after everybody else, so there's normally a walkthrough online for when I get stuck. But when you're playing it before other people, I mean, there's no walkthroughs to check out. So you just kind of got to stumble through it and figure it out and hope for the best and hope you notice that second door.
You're the vanguard, Joe.
I know. We try.
Trailblazer.
We try.
Yeah. You got to write the guide.
That's right. We got that community hub up on the Steam. Joe, you could write the guide. Joe's guide to playing Backbeat the Demo.
It's the second level.
Get really, really drunk. Step one. Step two, take a nap. I don't have any other steps
about
after
running
that.
Around the TV.
You're thinking like a bassist already.
God damn this
drunken nap.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, like, I am not even making something like, look, just dump a video into like the chat. He's like, this is how I got around it, so I can just hate myself for like, how did I not see that shit?
Arnell's not going to be happy until you stream the level, David.
I'm like, okay.
Everybody like, over to my Twitch right now. I am.
Like, it's like you said, like, when you were like, have you found the loop around the TV? I'm like, well, yeah, that's what I was doing. And I'm okay. Still
sticking by what. Got it. Yeah.
That's the easy part. It's like
maybe you're taking an extra turn or something before you get there. Maybe there's one turn. Because in this game, sometimes it's like you think you're going the shortest path, but sometimes there's a shorter path, maybe.
But that's, that's impossible, though. Like, it literally is, like, it's like, and I'm not even making this up, it's like, you get one step out of the garage. So either you can go right towards the boxes, left towards the door, but you can't go up, or you go up toward the TV. And that's efficiency right there. It's like, okay, well, right up, and then you take one more step to go to the chair that's facing in front of the TV, and then you go down and out, but that's when Dad's there, because he can't stop fucking walking. And it's like, okay, it's my turn. I lose a turn measure, kind of wait for this jackass, and that's what kills it. The fact that he won't get the hell out the way, and I can't get any other kids to block him, because it's like, So it's like, oof. Because it'd be nice if Toshi could, like, stand in front of him, and he's like, stops to talk to the kids, like, what are you doing standing in my living room? He's like, I don't know, but that's enough time for Josh to get by. This guy's intruding in the house. That's enough time, you know. But I digress. I'm killing the interview.
Name of this episode is called Purnell's Puzzle Problems.
Yeah.
I'm actually fine with that. It shows the real, shows people what it's like in the real world. Puzzle stumping.
There you go.
None of that fantasy stuff where all the puzzles solve themselves. No dice, brother.
Oh, jazz music. What made you go with jazz music in the game? Jazz and funk.
Yeah, so the, I think with Hexagroove, you know, we did EDM, and it was about the roots of dance music and clubbing and trance and you know, drum and bass and things like that. We really wanted to create the atmosphere of, like, going to a rave, going to an experience where the DJ's up in front and you're in a big crowd of people, and then what that environment is like. But with Backbeat, we kind of wanted to do a 180, you know, because some people said, oh, you should make Hexagroove but do it like with rock, or you should make Hexagroove and do it with like hip-hop or something like that. And there's definitely possibilities for other genres, but I think with analog music, like with live band music, it's you can't really build it out of clips in quite the same way that the way Hexagroove is built in, because the flow is different, the way the flow of the music and what you're trying to do with the crowd. With this game, it was about people working together, and we want to embody this idea of, like, you know, a band is bigger than the sum of its parts, and it's about making your partner look good, and it's about helping everybody shine, and everyone's contributing, and what success really means, and what is the value of having a band, of being in a band. And these are the kind of, like, story anchor points that I wanted to pull into the game. And to do that, then I think that music is, that's performed live, that's performed analog instruments, is the best for that kind of thing. So we went through different stuff and we were thinking, yeah, like you said, about, we thought about jazz, we thought about funk. I have been a big fan of Japanese music, of Japanese fusion in particular, and city pop and things like that. And so, like, music from the 70s and 80s, in Japan. And working with my co-founder, we were looking at different kind of genres, and I think that funk is a great genre to build a game out of, because funk is really about building up in repetition and then vamping, and it's something that you can do where everybody takes a turn, going back to the roots and soul and things like that. And how funk changes over the course of this game, how, what the band members, what they learn about what funk music is, and what they learn about being dogmatic about a genre and opening up your mind to different kinds of experimentation and not being set in your ways. There's messages here also that we wanted to convey. So the funk is the music that turns on Watts at the beginning of the game. She's been looking for something. It's the 90s. Punk is really big. And she doesn't just want to play in a cover band. She wants to do something original. So funk really, really turns her on. She gets into this world of funk. And then later she runs into this rival band, which is Latin jazz. And they're very hot, and they're these, like, they're the sweethearts of the town. They've got this great stage act and, you know, the coordinated costumes and everything like that. And so there's a real antagonism there, and she wants to prove that, you know, she's not just, a hobbyist and a reject, that they can really take it far. So the Watts and her band go up against this Latin jazz band, and they throw down at the battle of the bands to win a record contract deal. And that's what it's all about. So it's a great breath of fresh air for us. And it's like I said, it's a complete about face from, club dance music. And we're really happy to experiment in this new direction.
How did you get the soundtrack together? Because you have the four different paths in the game. How did you get each of the instruments to work together to get a cohesive sound?
So what we do is we take some pieces that are very much like Hexagroove in terms of how it works, because Hexagroove is built out of different clips split up by instruments that build a cohesive whole. And that's all about loops, because we don't know how long you're going to be hearing the music over and over. But with this game...
Pernell, how long are you hearing the music over and over?
What's that?
I said, Pernell, how long are you hearing the music over and over?
He's playing the game right now. He's stoned out. Yeah. He's like still trying to loop around the TV.
Oh, no, no. I finished it. In your face is chumps. Yeah, I finished that level. And I'm done.
Did you?
With stagger.
Really?
About. Okay. Yeah, I finished it. I'm a beast. Don't underestimate me. But honestly, all side note, all seriousness, I was surprised. I was like, wait a minute. I don't have to loop around the TV from the side I was coming on. Well, maybe I need to try the other side. Like, oh, there it is. Ow! It worked out there. But now, it's a nice stabbing, or introducing staggering, but I probably should stop now because I want to hear the music in the bar being played. But you will hear the music.
So what you hear is the clips. When you are making your moves, you hear individual clips one at a time. And because there's a limited number of turns, we know at most how long the song is going to be at the end. So there's a maximum potential length for the song. And then we have these different variations. And each move you make is several beats of music. And we have a variation so that improvising on top of the main flow going through the song works, that if you change that improvisation at any point in time. So if you go straight, you'll continue with one variation. If you make a left, it'll change to another. If you make a right, it'll change to another. If you do a 180, it'll be something else. And then what that is those four different directions map to different parts of how the music is progressing forward, so that you're building your own song, basically, out of the choices that you make in terms of when you're turning and proceeding and backing up. And all of those notes work together because there are different improvisation pieces cut up over top of the same song. So when you finish the level and then it all gets played back, all of the choices that you've made piecewise are assembled together into a cohesive song, which plays all the way through, which is that music video you see with the band doing their strut to the finish line.
But I do have to ask two questions about this, actually. So the first question is, by the nature of the video playing after you complete a stage, but the levels themselves being puzzles, does that mean that even though you'll be hearing like the improvisations as you make your blunders and stuff, there's generally only one solid solution, which is essentially what you arrange for it to sound like when you were done? You're like, when you beat the level proper, here's a cohesive song that we established, because if you don't do this, you ain't beating the stage.
Yes and no. So when you beat the level, the music you're hearing is exactly the choices you made all the way through. It's 100% exactly what you chose. Mm-hmm. But there's multiple solutions to most of the levels. So there's multiple songs that are possible out of them. And because you could turn left when I turned right, or I could stop when you didn't, or something like that, there's actually almost an infinite number of variations that can come out of this in terms of the
music.
It really
does come down to what moves and choices you make that the song comes together.
Definitely. And when you move deeper into the game and get the power moves, then you're going to have things like keyboard slides and solos and things like that. Then it gets even more variation, because maybe you're going to use Toshi to solve the puzzle and unlock the door, but maybe I'm going to use Watts. And then maybe Chris will use Josh and break through a wall because that's his special move or something like that.
Of course, the big dude breaks through the wall. The big dude who looks like the Kool-Aid man with the red shirt.
Exactly.
With the red shirt. First of all, the Kool-Aid man is... Well, Josh is legit. He's a relaxed individual. And he, when he walks, he even air drums. Like, you can't hate on that. That's awesome. Oh, before I forget, the second question I had in relation to the sound itself. So, I don't know what's triggering it. I'm sure it's like an actual technical reason for it. Like, when you're walking sometimes, you know, it does the normal sound. But every once in a blue moon, you'll, like, take a step, and you hear almost like a ding, 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 like, sound that pops up in addition to the normal sound. Mm-hmm. Is that something?
Yes. Are you talking about, is it like a egg shaker sound? Or is it a sound like a bell? Or does it sound like a guitar? What is it?
I think it's more like the egg shaker sound that you just referenced.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's going on? Did I do something? Did I trigger something? Is it saying I'm almost out of moves?
Yes, it is. That's exactly what it means. And that's great feedback. It's not supposed to be super clear, but it's like a gentle reminder. One plays when you're halfway out of moves and one plays when you're almost out of moves.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But we never tell you that with text or anything. It's just a subtle kind of thing that happens. So that's great that you were curious about that and didn't understand. That's great. Great feedback.
Well, I can definitely add to the feedback by saying that it wasn't a sound that I thought was overpowering. I didn't think it like hurt the image or anything. It was more of a curiosity thing because it existed and I couldn't 100% place what it was referring to.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you for the feedback.
Of course, of course. Now, like, I am curious, like, as far as the characters go, like, I'm already piecing together, like, various personalities from the characters, even on the demo aspect of things. Like, are any of the characters based on people you know? Or are these, like, characters that you're like, you know, I feel like Watts would be, you know, this sort of person. And Toshi would be, you know, the relaxed but needs to chill out sort of person. Like, what was the influence for these characters?
I think that it came from different kind of things. It's a lot of things put together. So on one part of the equation, it's when you think of an instrument and a band and the role, what is the stereotype or what is this person's role? And the bassist is the person that anchors everything together. The bassist is the one that really helps keep people in line. Ironically, they're not the ones that are usually you think about lead singers or lead guitarists or, you know, Eddie Van Halen or something like that, but it's the bassist. His job is to keep the time and keep the band together. And they're the ones that you know, pick up the slack and handle the BS and things like that. So that's part of why Watts is the bassist. And that's part of why, you know, Toshi, he's the synthesizer guy. So he's the gearhead. So that's like, you know, he's more obsessed with the tech about messing with patches and setting up the perfect sound in his instrument than actually playing in a band or making music with his friends. And that also works to a stereotype of musicians. Those of us that, like, you know, we get like buy all the software packages and all the music plugins, and then we spend forever just like finding the perfect sound but not actually making any music out of it. So that's also kind of like a cliche.
I know way too many friends that are like that. It's just like, look at my new software pack. What are you going to make with it? But it has cool sounds.
Yeah, exactly. So that's part of it. Part of it is, I guess, different kinds of people in the music in a band or kinds of musicians and their personalities is referenced by part of that. Another part is, I guess, what makes a good cohesive group, because we wanted to build something where someone could find someone they get connected with emotionally, you know, in terms of their personality and also their situation in life. I mean, Watts, it's like she went to college, she got a major in communications, and then she couldn't find a job after that, and she had to end up waitressing, and she kind of not quite sure what's going on with her future now, and you know, that kind of, okay, I've finished school, and I'm supposed to be in my career, but, you know, things aren't really clicking right now, what's going on, or what's next for me, or something like that, and then, I mean, later you get into the story, you find out, you know, what Toshi's and Josh's motivations are in terms of their family and obligation to their parents and to themselves and being responsible. And everybody has their own different drivers, I guess. And in the story of Backbeat, all of the characters have some growth that they go through. There's some kind of crucible where they realize some things, and then some of their allergies or their weaknesses or flaws, or whatever you want to call them, like run up into a wall sometimes, and they have to, you know, knuckle down and either get through them on their own or someone has to help them. So it's partially because of the role of music and kind of that cliche, and it's partially for the purposes of the story where I wanted to build a set of characters that you could really grow connected to and care about over the course of the narrative.
I feel a very strong connection with Josh. I love the fact that he's just happy-go-lucky, there to have a good time. Honestly, if you took his hair, erased it, and put a beard on him, he'd be me.
Are you the kind of guy to break down a wall to solve your problems, Joe?
Yes. Yes, I am. If it means I could be lazy and I have to exert a little force to be lazier, yes.
Yeah, but Josh is that. I mean, Josh is, at first glance, the most, I guess, laid back and kind of, you would say, not bothered by things kind of person. But later in the game, he's also the first person usually to step to the defense of Toshi, like when Toshi's getting bullied by someone or someone's trying to belittle him or make fun of the band or something like that. So he's a compassionate person. And he's also very protective as well.
Josh is the man. See, as I said, I think all the characters have something endearing to them, and I appreciate that about them. Though I do need to ask this, because I'm not sure. I mean, it could go either way, really, but do you see yourself on the final product doing, like, voiceovers, or is it more like let them have the text, and if the players imagine how they would sound if they were talking?
Yeah, I don't think voiceover is the way we want to go with this title. Partially because we're trying to build something which is like a modern homage to 32-bit era games. Like if you think about like PS1 type games with dialogue boxes and character text and like personas and Final Fantasies, and you know, we've got those kind of emotion animations the characters do when they're talking to each other and things like that. I don't want to kind of overproduce that. So that might be something that's a bit beyond the scope of what I want to do with this title, at least the first time.
Honestly, I think that's a good way to look at it, because it comes up a lot. Like, I'm not sure if anybody else has this vibe in the past, but like, you play a game nowadays and it has U.S. like, you know, English voiceovers, and it's gotten to the point now where you can like tell a voice a mile away. Like, I've heard that person in like 15 other games.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It makes it,
that takes me out of games sometimes too. So I miss the days when you didn't have voice acting and you can just read at your own pace. I'm playing Tales of Arise and I only listen to about a third of what the character actually says because I read quicker than what they say. So I speed through it and they only say a couple of words and it doesn't make sense anyway, unless I sit there and let it play out at its own pace, but too slow for me.
Yeah.
So voice acting isn't always a necessity in my mind. I can totally see where this game doesn't really need any.
Like, I'm down with that. It was one of those where I was curious about it, but like, it's been crossing my mind a lot more lately. Like, what was it like when I did the Medium earlier? I reviewed it for the show, and like, the villain was voiced by Troy Baker, who, like, I'm used to hearing him not be a villain, so now that I know that he's voicing the monsters, like, well, now I can't get that out of my head.
<It's> like, yeah.
Like, it's not working, so I'm good with the idea of, like, just putting my own spin on what these characters would feel and be like, so.
Yeah.
But I will say, I'm also curious about this, too, so, like, as far as the story goes, were there any, it's not, as long as it's not like a spoiler, of course, but were there any aspects of it that you could think of where you feel as though it was a challenge for you to write it in the way that felt believable?
Yeah, I think so. And again, it's hard, yeah, not to give any spoilers, but I just say coming to a conclusion that is not too forced. And also has enough, like, I mean, you want to balance setup and you want setup, but you also want it to be not telegraphed. Like, mm-hmm. I think the great thing is like when you watch like those dramas that are written really well, and then you get to the end, you're like, oh, so and so did blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, but then you watch this TV show a second time and you see they've like left you breadcrumbs from that from like day one. And if you like follow that character through, you know, six seasons or whatever, you find out, oh, that's why they ended up doing such and such, or they joined with blah, 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 or something like that. And we have in the game, there's 21 main story levels. And then there's a number of remix levels that are attached that kind of are not in the main storyline, but kind of like side mission type things. And though we split it up into a three act structure, and we had this, you know, image that we wanted to reach into the end. And I'm fairly happy actually with where the story ended up. I'm really looking forward to see how everyone receives it when it comes out, because it's been in a vacuum. It's just been me and the writing team that have been looking at it so far.
How long has the game been in the works?
We have been working on this off and on, I guess, since, I guess it's like, what do you call like the beginning of it? So in 2020, in February or so, after Hexagroove had come out for PC and the Japanese release and everything, we started work on our second game, and we did a number of prototypes. And there were three or four games that were competing for which was going to be the one we were going to do next. And I think we decided to pull the trigger and go with this one in May or June of 2020. And then we worked on it very rarely, like just a couple times a week, because last year we were doing lots of other stuff with Hexagroove and like awards show promotion and things like that, and some other projects on the side. So we've been poking at it, but we started it in earnest about a year ago in October of 2020.
Okay. And so I can honestly say what I've seen so far then is honestly very appealing. And the only thing that makes me sad about it now that I know that is that I'm not missing out, it just isn't in there yet. Like, I look forward to seeing how these extra abilities will factor into the puzzle solutions and the brain work required to figure out, okay, how do I resolve this aspect of things? Because as you already know from like when you're talking about Boxel and honestly other puzzle games, sometimes it's the abilities that really shake up the measure because it adds enough variability to the execution that now it's not just move. Now it's like, I have this ability. I can use it in any of five stages. Which stage is the appropriate stage with which to use it?
That's the tough thing because this game, what we wanted to do is we wanted to change up how we introduced mechanics from Hexagroove. Because with Hexagroove, although you unlock some things through time, you unlock more DJ tricks through time, and you unlock more instruments and stuff like that, the basic grading of the game is all there from the first level. There are 5 out of 6 of the musical rules. And we found that the game was so new and unconventional in terms of what we were asking the player to do that it overwhelmed a lot of people. So we wanted to be extra careful about not overwhelming people this time and took the mechanics in the game. And I think that there's at those 20 story levels or 20 main levels I talked to you about, like the mechanics are in maybe like 70-80% of that, where we introduce new ones. And there's like times where you practice with the new mechanics between each of those. But we wanted to spread all of those out through the entire game so nobody got overwhelmed. So we have this thing where we have like these graphs in Excel and everything. Like, this is the graph for how hard it is based on the puzzle. This is the graph how hard it is based on how many mechanics we've added. This is the graph for how hard it is for the player to think about based on how much story information is being conveyed, like, you know, conflict and stuff like that. And then we have an equation that computes what's the cognitive load of every single level in the game. And we want to set it up so the player is not overwhelmed by any one of these elements at any point in time. But overall, there's a curve that smoothly ramps up over the course. So as the player becomes more familiar with the game, their skill level is not outstripped along the way, and they don't either feel it's too boring or they want to give up and go away. And then the result of that is the mechanics are peppered through, you know, 3/4 of the game. So if I'm doing that now, but if I'm going to give you a demo, I can't give you a demo with 3/4 of the game, because then what are you going to pay for when I sell the retail version, kind of thing like that. And also, if it's a demo usually shouldn't be more than 30 minutes long, everybody says. That's like the most, at most, if not, you know, 15 minutes. So this game is going to be obviously much longer than that, and I can't cram all of that into 30 minutes. So it's, where do you slice? And story-wise, we slice right before the end of Act 1, I think. So there's a lot of story coming up and a lot of exposition, which hopefully gets you engaged the characters, so you want to come back and follow with us to the retail version, the full version of the game, see what happens to them, how they develop and grow. But mechanics wise, we can't give you too much. So we cut right after that first super unique thing, which is the first musical metric, which is introduced in the bar level in level 6. And then from that, there's like 10 times more stuff after that goes in that vein that makes it unique and changes those puzzle up in incredibly weird ways. But we couldn't give that all to you in the demo, unfortunately.
If you order now, you will also receive.
Backbeat the toilet paper.
Toilet paper, narrative arcs.
Backbeat the flamethrower.
That's one way to get past the dogs. Woof.
The kids
May
love
the
this
Schwartz
one.
Be with you.
Exactly. Ah. The kids love that thing.
But right now, I can definitely say that from what I've played of the game, on this demo aspect of things, I do like that it has a certain charm to it, and I get it. I'm a sucker for like 90s nostalgia type stuff, because it in the 80s were my era, more or less.
I miss the 90s. 90s were some good times,
and I think the character writing is honestly pretty nice right now. Like, there's just the right amount of hamming there, but they're not taking themselves too seriously. Like, you're not writing a story where it's like, I, the bassist, need to do this or else everything else will fall apart. You know, it's like, it's just,
well, that's how Chris talks all the time. So maybe.
Oh yeah.
Right, for the geek guys. Well, I, the bassist, will establish communications with the managers. But like, I think the dialogue feels natural and well. So like, it's a good look so far. And I did enjoy trying to figure out how to get the characters from point A to point B. So I genuinely do look forward to seeing how like more of it come to fruition and how the music expands on it as well. Once you start getting the other moves, and it's like, okay, because obviously the power slide is going to make a power slide sound. Like, I'm looking forward to hearing how all that stuff flows. So this Chris, is a good problem.
Chris, what are your thoughts on things? We haven't heard much from you. Purnell's kind of been dominating.
Well, you know, I just let, I like to let other people dominate.
Oh.
As a bassist.
As myself. A bassist, exactly.
Bassist.
Well, makes it all come together. Yeah, he's the anchor.
Yeah, then the pocket, like just...
My, I guess the only real thing I'm curious about is, like, I didn't catch who the composer was, but I was kind of wondering about what the, like, funk influences were for this one, because I know you can't say in the game, because I noticed everything is kind of hidden under this level of slightly changing the word so that nothing is actually... Yeah. You know, no trademarks are infringed.
Exactly. Yeah. So the composer for the piece, his name is Pete Frazier, and he is a studio saxophonist and has played with
saxophonist.
Yes, has played with bands like the Pogues and some other. And he knows a lot about funk, which is fantastic. So we were really lucky to be able to find someone as knowledgeable and as talented as him, and also in town. He just lives. About a 25-minute drive from where we work and things like that. So
convenient,
great.
But in terms of the musical inspirations, yeah, the way that we approach it is obviously with artists, giving them direction is usually received with open arms. We'd be like, I want it to be like this, but kind of a little bit different. And then like, they listen to that and they think about what works and then take it in their own direction and things like that. So the music and backbeat actually evolves through time in the way that we think it's a musical journey where we want the player along with the band to progress through time, through the definition of what does funk mean and what is this. So in the beginning of the game, you'll hear a lot of James Brown type stuff. Mm. And very simple kind of funk grooves that find their roots in soul. And it's not exactly like a one-to-one thing where it's always increasing in terms of the year, but like as you get deeper into the game, the band members get more proficient in their music. The stuff they do starts becoming more complicated. And then their interpretation of funk also starts to open up as well. Mm-hmm. So we have an inspirational playlist in Spotify that we used for the game. And it's builds, and it's, we have each of the 20 or so major themes that we have is like, okay, this is something, you know, the James Brown song, or this is so-and-so by like Sly and the Family Stone or something like that. And that's the kind of vibe that we capture. And we want, when we start from there and we capture these songs and we tie them to what the story element is too. So it's okay, in this story, there's going to be a lot of conflict and the rivals are going to show up. And there's going to be like kind of like a mini reveal. So we pick something that has a more kind of in your face or like an increased kind of tension. Oh, but this is the time where like it's kind of like a pause or like the energy level has come back down between conflict or you know, trials going on inside of the game. So we have something that's a bit more wacky or zany, or maybe two of the characters break off and kind of do their own thing. So yeah,
that's cool. Neat.
I'm ready.
Cool. So what games are you playing these days when you're not working on Backbeat? What are you enjoying?
That's a good question. So the amount of games that I play, I can probably make a graph for you of it. And it's related to what part of the game development process am I in? So like if I've just finished a game or if I'm about to finish making a game, then it starts ramping up. And then after I finished making a game, then it's like sky high. Or actually, I'm kind of tired then, so I'm not playing a lot of anything. And then like a month after that, it becomes sky high. And I play all kinds of stuff. And then as I get ideas and try to incorporate them, it comes down a bit. Then we work at the beginning of the game. Then it comes back up again towards like we're like nailing down what are the mechanics and the concepts in this game. And then the point like where we are right now, where we're like working really hard to get this demo done and out the door, I'm playing like no games at all. So then it's like... But after next month, then maybe I'll have some more time. But what I played a couple months ago when we were working on trying to finish up, like we were working the tutorial system, for example, we're like looking at other games, stuff like that. I was playing, I hadn't played it yet. Because actually, I don't play a lot of strategy games. I started playing strategy and puzzle games specifically for this game. Because my co-founder was really big into them, and that was it was his originally idea that started this game concept off. So like when I told you guys before, I think we talked about a year ago maybe, and you asked me what I was playing, and I said Into the Breach, and you said, oh, that sounds cool. And so now maybe you can start to see a bit of Into the Breach inspirations in this game. I'm not saying it's a one-to-one kind of thing, but there's some kind of like ties to it. And then I think about three or four months ago, I started playing Mario Rabbids. I never played XCOM before, but I heard Mario Rabbids is really good, and it was really good at like taking people who are not used to that genre and bringing them into it. So I played through that, and I was hooked on that. And that was really good.
That's an appreciated game, I think.
And I play games with my kids, and my kids like to play games that are about narrative because they're very small. So we like to play games that have stories and where you care about the characters and you're exploring. And so I think this year we went back and played King's Quest games because that was important to me as a child myself. I played it with my kids.
Nice.
And I played Mutazone. I don't know if you tried that. We were playing that together.
Not played that one.
Yeah.
Not familiar with that one. Root Beer's My Jam is asking, are you familiar with the Backbeat film about the early days of the Beatles?
Yeah, I heard about that, actually. You know, we were looking for like the name and stuff like that. We were like, okay, well, we want to get a name for the game, and what could it be? And I think we picked Backbeat kind of early on, and then we did like a Google search to make sure there were no other games called Backbeat, so we wouldn't have any kind of... Like with Hexagroove, there was not a lot of overlay either. But if you search for Hexagroove, there's like foot massagers and like tools you use on your truck, and that's about it. So, so we were okay there. But with Backbeat, of course, that word means like it's all over the place. But fortunately, there's no games called it. And what we did run into was that Beatles film that your commenter is talking about, and I have not seen it actually. But I was like, okay, that's interesting. But it's about the Beatles, so, and this is Funk, so I think we're okay. No, I haven't seen it.
No worries there.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Yeah, I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on some things, but maybe we should do that kind of offline and not in the podcast, because I'm really curious about like minutia about what worked and didn't for you. In terms of talking about the game and for the purposes of the podcast, I guess I just wanted to say that this is our second title. And there's this concept called like the second system syndrome, which is familiar in software engineering, which is just that the second time you make something, you think, okay, well, the first time, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. This time it's going to be better. And then you like tell yourself it's going to be like 20% better, and you're going to fix all these things that you messed up. But what happens is you always end up like trying to fix everything and stuff that wasn't even broken. And then it becomes like this huge, huge undertaking, which is like grossly exceeds your cost and expectations in terms of the budget and things like that. And then my co-founder told us like, yeah, we're this classic, you know, just because you're like, no, that won't happen to us. We'll make something within our means. But this game is so much bigger than Hexagroove, which is funny because it's, we've added so much stuff between like the art level and the characters and the writing and the way that we're changing how the game is portioned out to the player and things like that and how they can get on board. So it'll be a miracle if it ends up becoming something which is cohesive and then reaches the point where we want it to be. But I hope that everyone can look at this and see the kind of homage that we were trying to build, the homage to those 90 buddy movies about being in a band and backslapping jokes and feel good kind of American film. They're a homage to 1990s big box America, living in suburbia, going to Blockbuster, Aladdin's Castle, hanging out in the parking lot at Denny's and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, Aladdin's Castle. I miss Aladdin's Castle.
Yeah.
Described is exactly why earlier you were like, were you from the city? And I'm like, no, I'm from the city, but all the stuff you described just changed Aladdin's Castle for like a different arcade, like Timeout or something.
Yeah, Timeout, Pocket Change, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And that was pretty much my teenage years. We would just hang out in the food court, the arcade, and then the parking lot after they closed, just putzing around. And then even in the early 20s, it was in like Nickel City and all that junk after playing DDR for like 15 hours.
Definitely a lot of DDR per now. Holy hell.
Yeah, and Pump. Yeah, that was my stuff back in the day. So describing is right up my alley. I mean, now I'm only hoping that there's some kind of weird, like, heist level in the game where it's like, I don't know why we're going to rob, we're going to steal the Declaration of Independence, but we're going to do it. For the-
My lips are sealed.
Oh, man.
My Lord. Well, the game is going to be on the Steam Next Festival. When is that happening?
That starts on Friday. Yeah.
So it starts on Friday. The demo will be available there. How long does that go on for?
That runs until the 7th. So we're doing live streams. We're doing three of them. This game is dual language. We have a full Japanese support this time also. So we'll have a live stream in English on Sunday. It will be at 1:00, I think, actually, Eastern time. And then there will be another stream on Monday night Eastern time. So it's like 11 p.m. Eastern, like 5 a.m., I think, or 5:30 a.m. our time. And there's a Japanese stream in between those two. But so Sunday or Sunday afternoon or Monday night, you can definitely come by the page, and I will be there with my team. We'll be talking about the game and the inspirations and answering any questions anybody has. So please come on by and visit our live streams, and you can get notified by those if you wish list the game on Steam.
And that'll be directly on the Steam page, yeah?
Yes, yes. It's written right up there on top. Yeah.
Yeah, that's. I think that's all we got. Pernell, Chris, anything else on your end?
Oh, no. Anything. The only thought I had, though this is a demo, so honestly it might not factor in, but it only comes to mind because of recently playing World's End Club, and they did something like this. Is there any thought on, like, having the story, like, even though you're just going from stage to stage, like, if you want to revisit the stage, have it, like, on sort of like a narrative timeline aspect of a picking the level you want to go back to, so it's like, okay, here's Act 1, Stage 2, or something like that, and it's like selecting it off the line, the timeline.
Yes, yes, you could definitely do that, because this game is about getting the best score. You haven't gotten to a scored level yet. That's the next level, the bar level. But you get, like, you get ranks, like you in Hexagroove, like C, B, A, S, and then S plus this time around. And based on what rank you get, you unlock more stuff. And if you want to get, like, all of the fans and the musical customizations and things like that, you need to do well on one of the levels. So, of course, you can go back to any level at any time. You can play through it just to improve your maximum score on the level. Or you could play through it again if you just want to hear the story. Either way.
Awesome.
Awesome. So it sounds like the game is going to be good stuff. Very excited to see how it goes over the next coming months. You said it should be out by March?
Yeah, we're looking at sometime in Q1 next year.
Q1 next year. And I know you'll be back on sometime before then to talk about it. We love having you on.
Well, I would love being here. Thanks so much. You guys are fantastic.
So, yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show. Chris, you'll still be here. Pernell, you'll still be here. Tim Ekibis will drop by because he's got a game to talk about. But we're gonna take a quick musical break, and we'll be right back. David, do you have any final words to end the interview?
No. Thanks a lot, and I hope to see you at the Steam Next Fest in our live streams this week.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone else here?
Yeah.
Hi.
Yay, they're here. Tim's like, I just want to get this over with and go to fucking wrestling tomorrow.
It's like Christmas.
Wrestling tomorrow? Are you going to a live event or something?
I am going to a live event or something, yeah.
Where's
that? Very excited. Rochester. It's about an hour away from here. Next town over.
That should be awesome, actually. Hope you have a good time.
I think that I will. I expect that I will be having an excellent time.
I swear to God, if you come on the show next week, I'm going to, like, what the fuck?
I have confidence that it's going to be pretty great. If it's bad, I'll be very sad, but that seems to run counter to everything that this company has done for, you know, 2 years
A bad show.
They've had, like, dynamites.
They had that explosion match that ended with a wet fart, and they've had some middling show, but they haven't had any outright bad episodes.
No, the worst was, like, the worst, quote-unquote. I think it was, like, their go-home show for Double or Nothing, where we're like, boy, this sure is a go-home show.
And so, W Dynamite, which is odd. I feel like I remember that abbreviation from somewhere. But is that what it is?
Yes. It's All Elite Wrestling.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, too. Okay. So, yeah, that's going to be that should be a great time. Take pictures.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, they're requiring vaccination.
Nice.
Which is great. I'm riding out there with Danimal Cannon, which is great.
Ooh.
I'm...
That guy.
You know, gonna... Hopefully... Well, I'm sitting next to one friend who I've not seen in probably, like, 15 years at this point. Really? In person, I don't think.
Is he local to you?
He is now. He moved to Rochester just before the pandemic started. We were making plans to hang out. And then the pandemic started. So that got scuttled. But
I wonder why.
Yeah, and then another friend of mine,
coincidence, like,
Albany, is going to be there. So I might try to find him if I can before the show starts. But, you know, we'll see. I at least want to say hi, hello, how you doing? But he's not sitting with me. He's up in the stand somewhere with the rabble. So
I got to say,
rabble.
Well, I guess it's not post-COVID, but
I'm keeping all this in the show, by the way. I'm just going to fucking dance around it. We're back from the interview, by the way.
Oh, okay, yay.
It was a fun interview, wasn't it, guys? Yeah, it was. Wasn't it great? Yeah.
I don't know. Who did we talk to?
I was there.
Well, Chris and Purnell were there. You weren't.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's fine.
I tried getting you, and you didn't reply to me. You were probably too busy thinking about wrestling.
I was probably busy.
Yeah.
When was it? Wait, which one was it?
It was David Ventura for Backbeat.
Oh, was that on Sunday?
Yes.
Okay, that's why. Yeah, you're not getting me to do shit on a fucking Sunday afternoon.
Fair.
100%.
I didn't realize you could just say no.
Yeah, it's like I'm stuck watching my kid by myself all day, and no, I cannot do anything besides that. Though I have, you know, made that work in the past sometimes, and it has involved me, like, scolding my child while recording. So
those are always fun, by the way.
Is it, though?
Yes, it is. I think it's great.
Maybe not for me.
It's so fun to listen to, and it's just adorable and cute.
Yeah, he's a hoot.
Is he going with you to wrestling?
No. Oh. No, he is not going with me to wrestling. He cannot be vaccinated yet.
Mm.
So he very cannot true. Go. I... Like, again, pre-pandemic, I was, like, circling the idea of possibly taking him to a, like, WWE live event or, like, the local promotions shows. Though I have never been to one, so I don't know how family-friendly they are. But, yeah, I may do that. Take him to the local so he can see some wrestling up close in person. I think he'd enjoy it in person. I think he'd enjoy it watching people fight.
WWE is starting to get a little more... A little more mature. He had Bobby Lashley calling Big E a chicken shit.
Oh, wow. Man, just people throwing out shit on cable TV all willy-nilly now.
Yeah, they're dropping shits and bitches all over the place now.
It's like...
Well, there's our title episode.
Shits and bitches.
The Attitude Era is ramping back up slowly but surely. Eventually, WWE's going to be like, oh, we're going to have people bleed. Fuck. Where everyone's going to bleed.
I wish I could call the episode Shits and Bitches.
No one's stopping you.
YouTube wouldn't like it.
Bits and Snitches or something. Bits and Snitches.
That's not bad. Classic spoonerism.
Things that get snitches. Stitches.
What else are you going to do at the show? Like, do you have any other plans?
I mean, I'm mostly there to watch wrestling for 4 hours, but That's about it. You know, we're getting there early. I'm trying to get there like shortly after doors open or when doors open so that I have time to, because I'm assuming that processing people and their vaccination proof into the building is going to take time. I have not been to a show in this arena in a long time, so I'm not 100% sure where I'm going to park. I want to be able to, hopefully meet up with aforementioned friends to see them real quick before the show and possibly visit the merch booth and see what wares they have and maybe get an expensive shirt without having to pay expensive shipping on it.
Yeah, man, the shipping prices getting AEW shirts. God damn.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know. Shirts are not as cheap as they used to be because nothing is. Granted, some are still reasonable, but I don't know. For the most
part, good though. Yeah, they're comfy. I like the AEW shirts.
But you got to remember, you know, when you're buying a wrestler shirt from AEW, the wrestler is actually seeing money from the purchase.
And you're actually buying it from a t-shirt company.
Yeah.
So they specialize in that shit. And it's like specially made for you. Sheets and beaches. Oh, my God.
I love that we're like spitballing all kinds of titles for this episode. We're what, like 9 minutes into?
Yeah. Well, there was an interview, so.
Yeah, there was an interview.
I meant 39 minutes into, I don't know.
Oh, man. So should we dive into reviews or is there anything anyone wanted to talk about before we get into them?
I'm fine with reviews. It just started raining over here and I'm hearing some thunder. So I'm like, oh,
boy. For now, anything on your end?
Mm-mm.
No, nothing. Really?
Not a thing.
I brought up the wrestling, and that just silenced him.
Yeah. And I was like, fuck this wrestling talk. Wrestling killed my father.
Don't bait him into a tangent.
Well, we need a lively Purnell because he's kicking things off.
Oh, snap. Time to gas up Purnell.
All right, well, first game to talk about tonight is In Sound Mind, developed by We Create Stuff, published by Modus Games, released September 28th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $34.99. As you awaken the corridors of an inexplicable building, you'll find the environment takes on a life of its own and leads you to discover a series of victims, all exposed to the same experimental chemical. In your search for answers, bizarre visions emerge and introduce a host of imposing horrors and a cat named Tanya.
Imposing what?
Horrors.
Oh, horrors. Got it.
Yeah.
Sorry, and a cat. His day, you know, the pressure was a little impression. Horrors. No.
Getting a bunch of horrors with you.
It's a hard word to enunciate. Yeah. Like,
well, yeah, fortunately, well, this game has none of that going on. This game is all about the spooky and the ooky. And spooky, I can say that, and I can say that I do like the vibe that it gives off when it does it spooky / ooky. So in this game, you play as a psychiatrist named Desmond, who, as Joe mentioned, wakes up in his apartment building in the basement. You know, I got there, doesn't know why he's there. He does know that shit's going weird. He can't get out. And he's also being haunted by a gravelly voiced guy who I guess can best be described as like a zombie wearing a trench coat and a hat, like Dick Tracy. And you're essentially tasked with trying to figure out how the hell to get out of here. Now, the thing that makes this particularly cool, in my personal opinion, is that unlike a lot of typical horror games where you kind of are exploring locations, though in a sense you kind of are doing that here too, the locations themselves are made up of the minds of the patients that you saw as a psychiatrist. So as you wander around the apartment complex, you will come across cassette tapes hidden. Well, not really hidden because that's the point of the game, but you'll come across cassette tapes littered throughout the locales as you explore. You take those cassettes back to Desmond's office and you put them in the cassette player. You will be transported to a mindscape that is built off of the fear of one of the cassette tape's owner. So, for example, the first place you go is a grocery store, which is like a point of fear for the first mind you explore, which is Virginia. And there's a reason behind this context there, and I won't spoil that per se, but you're exploring an abandoned grocery store. Now, as you're exploring locations, you're pretty much in typical horror game fashion, walking around the dark quite a bit. So you do get a flashlight, and said flashlight is powered by batteries. You don't really equip the batteries or anything. It's just as long as you have the flashlight equipped and turned on, it will slowly, it will quickly drain because it is not a slow drain. Note, I'm playing on normal mode. Maybe an easier difficulty might change that, but I wasn't going that route.
Did they pull an Alan Wake and partner with anyone for the battery product placement?
Nope. These things are as generic as it gets. And to be honest, I generally prefer when they have product labeling sometimes. I'm that guy. It's like, it makes it strangely believable. Like, Energizer batteries. But in this case, these are very generic.
7 minutes.
Honestly, that's probably quicker than the batteries in this game last. I mean, each battery gives you a charge of 10, and that thing drains out quick. But I won't go into my playstyle, but let's just say I kept it above around like 80 because I was so frugal. I just kept walking around the dark. Just
bumping into shit.
Oh, yeah, man. I got those bad eyes. Echolocation.
What's this?
In addition to the actual flashlight, you will get a pistol. Funny enough, the pistol isn't all that useful in this game because there is one generic enemy type that you'll generally see throughout the stages. I refer to them as blinkies because I don't recall what they're called. But they're basically like black miasma walking around with red or colorful lights for eyes, like just one giant circular eye. And it flashes red until it sees you, and it goes like yellow and green, like a flashlight. Wild, right?
Fucking yeah! So
you use the gun to kill them, usually by popping them square in the eye. Much tougher than you think it could be unless you're just generally good at FPS games. I am not. So I burned through some serious bullets just trying to kill the black goo itself. Now
I don't know how to segue black goo into a sub, but shout out to Root Beer is my jam, who just gifted a 1 month sub to Dark Mika.
Easy. Root Beer is black goo.
Yeah, Root Beer is black goo.
Speaking of black goo,
the syrup. Yeah, I guess.
Root Beer is my jam.
Root Beer is my black goo. Yeah.
If it was Root Beer flavored jam, it would be definitely a black goo.
And tap. But as far as this guy goes, unfortunately, there is no root beer, but there may be a little bit of jam in that grocery store. Possibly. As there would be root beer, too. Both. But in addition to the general enemies I described before, which they do change up a little as you get into the game, like they get different abilities and stuff, despite not looking differently. The main adversary in each location is also a sort of a dark version of the patient itself. So, again, an example of the first one without spoiling exactly what it looks like or anything, because I feel like that's a large part of the game is seeing them for yourself. The host of that first environment pretty much stalks you throughout the grocery store. And the reason why I still think it's worth mentioning it is because even though you're mainly dealing with like the occasional black blinky and also the spook, the thing that I feel makes this game particularly cool is I feel like in some respects, they kind of get a little special with the puzzle and stuff. At least the first level does the best job of it. They don't maintain that momentum throughout, but I still enjoy the exploration. At the first level, you find a mirror, and it shatters, but you pick up a piece of that mirror. And when you hold the mirror up in your hand, it reflects behind you what's there. So like if there's say like some secret items on the level, they'll flash a special color in the mirror shard. You put the mirror shard down, turn around, and they're there for a little bit before they fade away. That part can be a little annoying, admittedly, because the idea of not having a quick turn button and having to use that for secret hunting can be a pain in the butt. But in the context of the level itself, it's cool because you have to use it to fight off the spirit. The spirit comes rushing at you. You have to hold the mirror up and catch her in your gaze as she's coming at you from behind. She sees herself. She freaks out and runs away. And it's awesome. I like doing that. Not so much the using it for secrets part, though I just accepted that and dealt with it. And as you explore each of these locations, you'll generally find some sort of item, like the aforementioned mirror shard, that can be taken with you outside of that location after you've completed it and solved all the puzzles or whatever, and can be used to further explore the apartment building. Like that mirror shard can be used to cut police tape, which is blocking off areas of the apartment building, which will allow you to explore more, find more tapes, yada yada yada, and eventually solve your problem.
Wish more games let you do that. Like, oh no, police tape, I can't proceed any further. Fucking
cut it. It's kind of funny, actually, like, when you see that for the first time, like, I mean, I accept this is a video game, but I also just kind of put in my head, like, maybe this is some kind of weird ethereal police tape, but he's like, man, this is a really strong police tape. I'm like, jump over it! Jesus! If you can't tear it, just jump over it. But I'm like, stop it, Pernell, it's a video game, you know, they do that shit. I can blow up walls, but I can't blow up this door. I need a key. Like, now! It's a wood door, and you have a rocket launcher. Just shoot the fucker. Nah, can't do that. It'll damage the integrity of the building structure. But honestly, I still end up finding this game to be an enjoyable run. Like I said, the mirror shard thing can be annoying. I do feel like there's certain areas where the game expects you to like figure stuff out under duress, and it might come back to bite you in the ass. I mean, it's forgiving when you die. Like, it pretty much plops you right back to try again in most cases. But there were more than a few scenarios where I was like, oh my God, stuff's happening. Figure out a way. But it's really dark and it's changing. Like, the environment is literally changing around me as I deal with this scenario. And I don't know where I'm going. And I died. And obviously, it's a double-edged sword because on some hands, you're like, cool, tension, real tension. I got to figure this out. But once you die the first and second or second time, you didn't figure it out, the tension is gone. Now you're just like, fuck, where the hell is the exit? This is stupid. But early on, of course, it is cool. Like, I had a lot of fun trying to figure out how to get out of these scenarios and all that. So, honestly, I feel as though this game is a good time. It's not the cup of tea for people who are seeking out, like, actual murder, pew-pew action. Like, this isn't Resident Evil Village. This isn't even Resident Evil 7. This is... literally, I am a psychiatrist who's exploring mental landscapes. And that's what they're going for. It's like a psychological horror type exploration game. And I think that's pretty awesome. And the level gimmicks are awesome. And there's even a collectible in the game, though admittedly, I have no idea what it really does. Like, there are these pills that you find hidden in different areas of the game, whether it be in the apartment building or in the different dreamscapes. For every three, you will upgrade the stat corresponding to the pill type. There's speed, health, stealth, and stamina. And for the life of me, I have not noticed what the hell stealth is doing. Like, I don't feel sneakier. It ain't working. So, but the health is noticeable, the speed is noticeable, and the stamina is a little noticeable too.
And so, there's a cat.
Oh yeah, there is a cat. The cat starts talking to you. It's pretty much the only non-raspy voice douchebag that you speak to. But the cat has a very elegant voice. You can pet the cat. I don't know what triggered that trend, but now everybody's doing the pet animals thing. And I'll admit, I'm fine with that.
I was going to say, do you have a problem with that?
No, I think it's interesting. Not just that you can do it, but they always also reflect to say either be an achievement or something that says, yeah, you can pet this cat. If you go to like the Steam store for this game, they straight up say, you can pet the cat. Yep.
That is indeed a feature, a key feature in the game. You can pet the cat. So for $34.99, is it worth petting the cat?
I personally think it is very much worth petting the cat. It is a decent game. You will get some joy out of it. Again, don't come here expecting some kind of Resident Evil Village romp. Expect some psychological horror weirdness and mindscapes. You can't go wrong with mindscapes.
No, you can't. Let's keep the cat talk going. What do you say? More kitties. Next game to talk about is Floofy's Adventure.
That was awful. You need to take your cat to the vet. Holy shit.
My God. I think it's a little late. A death gurgle.
Yeah, next game to talk about is Floofy's Adventure, developed by Cosmic Boop and Valorware, published by Valorware, released September 23rd on Steam for $14.99. Join Floofy and friends on an epic side-scrolling adventure. Zap, beam, and fly your way through five unique worlds and put an end to Uzu's chaos. Chris, tell us about Floofy's Adventure.
Funny, my cat just came over to talk to me, so that's...
About Floofy's Adventure?
Yeah, so appropriate.
And my cat Coltrane just jumped on my chair, so they know what's up.
I'm allergic.
Yeah, my cat's telling me that it's raining outside. It's kind of cute. He like looked out the window and he immediately came over to me and was like, meow. I was like, yeah, I know.
We gotta go. Gotta get the fuck out. Does your cat swear? I don't know. I don't want to put
he bad probably words does.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
We swear at him, so he knows the words.
Okay, cats are filthy. We all know that.
Yeah.
Exactly. How's Floofy's adventure?
Filthy. No, I'm just kidding. That would be great, though.
Dicks everywhere.
shout outs to Cosmic Boop. That's a great and very appropriate developer name for something like this. This is like, holy geez. Well, so it's it looks like a shmup, but and I'll explain later what a shmup is. But what it actually is a free roaming twin stick shooter adventure kind of game. Starring, of course, a cute kitty in a flying saucer. A snail scientist named, I want to say, like, Dr. Snail or something like that. A very, very appropriate name. invented a kind of, like, super weapon for some reason, because I guess Raytheon is, like, hiring snails now. to make their war toys. And it has this effect that drives a local kitty cat mad with power. And so he kidnaps steals the flying saucer and proceeds to wreak havoc. And so you, the aforementioned Floofy, are interrupted. Your breakfast of toast and strawberry milk is interrupted so that you can hop in your ship and go stop him. And so, you know, real intense storyline. I almost didn't make it. So you go through these stages that are all laid out on a map. And in each stage, Floofus Interruptus, I love that. speaking of. You go into the stages, and after a lengthy tutorial stage that explains literally everything in the game for you, you basically go across the map and not only beat the stage by just, you know, making it from one end to the other through a like kind of tunnel system, essentially. You also are charged with collecting things. And if you collect things, that unlocks gear that you can equip to Floofy. Of course, they're all adorable costumes and also adorable upgrades to your UFO ship to make it even cuter and even more deadly.
Yay. Well,
for God's sake, come on, dude.
What happened over there?
Whatever it was cat related. It all is thematic with the review.
The cat pulled a knife.
Yeah, I know. He kind of did, actually. He got me on his way down.
Oh, God.
Anyway, whatever. It's all good. So, so you upgrade your...
I heard it was all good. Apparently that was a lie. Can we believe anything in this review? I don't know. We'll find out.
No, I just let the cat out of the room because he's being a bother.
Put the cat out of the bag and went out of the room.
So, let's start this review over. No, just kidding.
What is a shmup?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Let me pull up this beaker unloaded. Reloaded, sorry. So, yes. You increase the deadliness and adorableness of both your kitty and your UFO, and you also can find secret areas in every stage that take you to a puzzle-based shooting segment where you use your ship and lasers to solve puzzles to basically... Oh, you also have, like, a tractor beam and stuff, and you use that to, like, kind of take, like, a ball and put it into, like, a basket. Although it's a mechanical ball in a mechanical basket, of course. And then you and rescue these little things. I don't know what they are. They look like little fruit insects. I don't know. Every character in this game is just like just a Lisa Frank, like, you know, over the top thing.
It is such a colorful, bright, cute, so adorable colorful game.
Yeah, and it really does strive to be like the most wholesome thing out there too. But anyway, if you rescue these little thingamabobs from these stages, these special puzzle stages within the shooting stages, then you get to play a card game with them. It's kind of like the Final Fantasy IX card game. And I won't go too much into detail on that one, except to say that you can collect a bunch of cards, but you also lose them if you lose the game. So I was like, I don't have time for this. I am making an edit, an executive decision to not play this card game. But it seemed pretty fun and fairly simple. It's, you know, card collecting and fighting. And I'm just like, a card game within a shooter is pretty amazing. So yeah, there's like plenty of stuff in this game. And every few stages, there's a nice screen-sized boss that you get to fight. And there's this whole storyline about, you know, that is ongoing. Even though it's fairly simplistic, it's a really good game. And I also, you know, oftentimes a game will look kiddish, and especially in the, you know, the cute-em-up category, where it'd be like, oh, this is adorable, but it's also kind of hard. So like, this is for adults, even though it looks like it's for kids. If you put this game on easy, you could give this game to a kid and they will be able to play it. It is very accessible. Things are like clearly like laid out. All of the optional stuff is optional. So, you know, you don't have to do the brain teaser stuff if you don't want to. This is actually a game I could recommend as like literally baby's first shoot 'em up.
Nice.
As weird as that sounds.
Baby's first twin stick shooter.
Yeah, baby's first twin stick shooter.
Nice. So $15 on this one. What do you think of Floofy's Adventure?
I would say, you know, def give it a go. There's not a whole lot here to challenge the hardcore, but I mean, are you really looking at a game called Floofy and like and thinking to yourself, yeah, I could do this?
That's gonna like, challenge me. Floofy's yeah, gonna I really, fuck my world up.
Exactly. Yeah, the aesthetics are not going to draw in the wrong crowd, trust me. But I will say that what is here, there is no, you know, they didn't spare the expense as far as like content and quality goes. So yeah, this is absolutely as good as it looks, if it looks good to you.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Next game is Hoa, developed by Scrollcat Studio, published by PM Studios, released August 24th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Hoa is a beautiful puzzle platforming game that features breathtaking hand-painted art, lovely music, and a peaceful, relaxing atmosphere. Tim, tell us about Hoa.
Obligatory. I was expecting a homeowners association joke. Waka, waka, waka. And they're terrible, just like Hoa. Wait, no. That's not true. Because like homeowners associations are like the worst thing on the planet, and this game is rather delightful, really. So this is a little, pretty simple, pretty breezy puzzle platformer game where you're this little forest gnome sprite. Not going to lie, the theme from good old David the Gnome was playing in my head a little bit when I was playing this game. a deep old Nickelodeon cut there.
But, I love my David the Gnome. I like. Is that on DVD anywhere? Can I buy that shit?
Maybe in France or Spain or wherever it originated from.
Real quick, Carnage is asking, it was apparently unplayable on the Xbox, getting past the beginning screen. Is that something you ran into? Did you?
Oh, no, it is playable on the Switch.
You were on the Switch. All right.
Yeah, I did not.
I can't even remember what platforms we get some of these games on. So,
I mean, usually Xbox is a pretty good guess, but yeah, no, this is a, I reviewed on the Switch, and there is, anyways, so yeah, you're this little, dude, wearing a just big one-piece cloak. All you really see is his feet and his face, and you move about, you appear to be tiny, and the world around you appears to be rather large. You move around this forest, platforming around. Usually you are tasked in a particular like area. As you move into a new area, they give you a map right away. And usually very quickly thereafter, you are tasked to find a number of little shiny butterflies in the area, or otherwise maybe hit a couple other switches in the area and then find butterflies. But it's mainly exploration. There is not what one would deem combat in this game. You move around and, you know, leaves will pop out of the background for you to hop up on as you climb up inside of trees, and you'll go out on branches, and there will be, like in the first couple areas, there's these beetles which you can lead around to make platforms for yourself to jump a little bit higher. As you play, you will, of course, get like a few new abilities, like the incredible ability to push blocks. So you can do block puzzles and, you know, double jump and do groundy poundy stuff. Oh, like nothing like there's like nothing crazy or like, you know, mold breaking or groundbreaking going on in this game. It is just nice, simple, relaxing platforming and puzzling. Like none of the puzzles are going to, you know, you're not going to sit there stuck on a puzzle,
which I'm happy with in games. I don't need a puzzle game to just wreck my brain completely. Like,
yeah. And it's not that. This is a game that you're going to pretty much breeze through, for better or worse, because it's not terribly long, but it has a really nice, chill look to it. I think the environments and the characters all look really good. Playing it on the Switch, in portable mode, the frame rate was not the best. But it was, you know, still playable. It just didn't look terribly smooth. I think the music is really nice. And it was like, you know, I sat down and I was playing this game the other night and I was just like, man, this is just like so relaxing right now, and it feels great because of it. Like, it is not, you know, pushing my brain too hard, but it is engaging and a joy to look at and listen to as I go through these levels. There's only like maybe like a half dozen levels in the game. When I said it's short, I mean it's like maybe 2 hours max, probably a little bit less than that if nothing hangs you up at all,
a fun 2 hours? Is it a worthwhile 2 hours for $15 bucks?
It's enjoyable. Whenever something is like whenever something is like that short, I feel like the question of price to length is going to come into play, and people are going to have to make their own value assessments as to whether $15 of monies is equal to 2 hours of video game time. But if it's not, like, you know, games go on sale, and
true.
Once those two numbers meet a comfortable place, it is going to be worth buying for you. There's cool stuff to see. It's a nice game to sit down with for an evening and play through. It's just a really nice experience.
Cool. It looks like we have to issue the correction that it is only available on PS4, PS5, PC, and Switch right now. It is not on Xbox due to a loading issue.
Okay.
So the Xbox version will be coming eventually. It was released and then pulled, so some people do own it. It's just they can't play it.
Very good.
Kind of loading issue with it, so...
Sometimes that stuff happens.
Yeah, and hopefully either they issue refunds or they get it fixed soon. So fingers crossed. But that is it for you, Tim.
Yeah, that's it. I guess I'm off to get, hopefully, a very good night's rest, because...
Tomorrow is going to blow your fucking mind.
Tomorrow is going to blow my mind, and I'm probably not going to get home until like 1 in the morning.
Are you bringing a sign?
I did not have time to make a damn sign, unfortunately. I mean, it's just, I was thinking about that the past.
Poster board and a marker. You can do it in 2 minutes.
Well, I need to acquire a poster board. I have markers.
I think you should just pick up a blank poster board and bring it for Orange Cassidy and just hold up a blank poster.
I have ideas. I think I kind of just came to terms with because I want to join the video game discourse, but I'm also like.
Just put Final Fantasy VI is the best Final Fantasy. You don't even have to believe it. Just do it because it's...
I do believe it because it's true.
Yeah.
In that case, you're on point then. Yes, because it is true. I just didn't know you believed it.
Yeah. I think my best opportunity to be on camera is going to be when entrances are happening, but I don't know if my seat is like maybe just... Because I'm not right next to the aisle or the entryway. I'm like, you know, 7 seats out, so maybe on a wide shot of the entry, but like I'm just like I got enough stuff to worry about. if I get a chance in something, you know, I could just get like an 11 by 17 piece of paper and write something on it. We'll see. But it's not at the top of my list for work. I don't want to stress it. I want to go enjoy myself, because this is make no mistake, this is like the biggest thing I've fucking done in a year and a half since MAGFest 2020. Yeah. You know, for a very long time there was nothing to go to because I live in New York and we have health regulations. You know, no concerts, no conventions, no special events, no nothing. This is the first big like entertainment thing that I am doing since MAGFest in January 2020. So I don't want to sit there and stress and be like, oh man, I got to make a dumb sign and hope it gets on TV. And if not, I'll just tweet it at Matthew so I can join the discourse. It's like, no, man, I'm just like, I'm worried about my snacks and being hydrated and just getting there and having a good time. And
just tear a sheet of notebook paper and write an OC on it. Like, make sure it's been folded, so it's been in your pocket, and just hold up a crinkly OC.
It's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea.
That is as low effort as you could get for him.
Fair. Maybe I will. Maybe I will do that. I will find some lined paper and like write on it and then leave it in my back pocket all day until, because I'm pretty sure he's going to be the main event of Rampage at like 10:45 tomorrow night. And then I'll get that out of my pocket. And,
oh yeah. The hair match. Oh
yeah.
Gonna be good stuff.
Yeah, should be great. Yeah.
Well, enjoy yourself. And
thank you.
We'll talk to you next time.
See ya.
Any final words?
Don't come back pissed.
Don't come back pissed.
Do not come back pissed.
All right. Yes, sir. Heard. Good night.
All right. Next game to talk about is Crisis Wing, developed by Pie Slice Productions and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft. Released September 22nd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $7.99. Push your shoot 'em up skills to the limit in this nostalgic pixel art style as you launch into Crisis Wing, lovingly crafted to recall the frantic action of arcade classics. Featuring 7 vertical scrolling stages, upgradable weapons, and cooperative multiplayer, Crisis Wing combines modern gameplay advancements with a nostalgic presentation enriched by a rocking FM soundtrack and CRT filters for a genuine old-school vibe, which I would absolutely turn off immediately. But Chris, what did you do in Crisis Wing?
Turned them off immediately.
I don't know who uses CRT filters. I can't stand them. I thank you for making them optional that I could turn them off.
Yeah, they're fine. And plus, I mean, among the video options, you know, you do have some low res options, and you can also apply Tate mode, so you can flip the screen if you want.
Ooh.
Which is nice because yeah, it's a vertically scrolling game, so you know, of course, it's going to take up 30% of the Switch's screen real estate. Playing on a TV or in handheld mode by default. So yeah, Crisis Wing is very much like, it's a vertical shooter, and it is, you know, to a fault, very true to its roots, which is, you know, arcade and about the Sega Genesis era of things. Like, I got big Toeplan vibes from this. If you don't know that developer, that's things like what's it called, Truxton and like Zero Wing, you know, all your bass and whatnot. It's kind of like in that era, and yeah, definitely they bring the FM soundtrack. That's going to sound very, very familiar to people who were blast processing in the back in the day. but yeah, it's a vertically scrolling shooter, which has basically, you know, you fly your ship around. It's kind of like, I'd probably call it medium speed. It's a little light on different things like upgrades. You can't upgrade your speed, you can't adjust the difficulty. But you know, you can fill the screen up with bullets in one of 3 ways, and that's, you know, the typical red, green, and blue like power-ups that come along. The red one gives you a nice spread shot, the blue one gives you homing missiles, and the green one gives you not quite spread shot. It just spreads out your straightforward shot out by about 5 more spaces. So it gives you like a more concentrated thing there. And of course, being a vertical shooter, it has bombs. And the bombs are giant green skulls. It's very cool. of course, you're going to want to save those for the bosses, because the bosses can be quite rude. Again, this is very much a shooter that knows its roots. That's absolutely for certain. And yeah, it's just, it's seven stages and seven bosses. Again, it can be tricky because they don't give you any options to lower the difficulty. So, you know, your game options, interestingly, so you got an instant respawn, which you could turn on or off. I mean, instant respawn is very typical of the genre. However, if you die and if you lose all your lives, you have to start the stage over anyway. So that's one thing. It's not a rich kid strats game. And you know, you got your choice of colors of your ship between red and blue. It's a up to two player game, and so you can either have your two players share lives or have their own stock, which is kind of cool. It does have a color blind mode, which is nice, and it has a border color option, which you can either make the border black or slightly less black, which is really funny to me. But that's kind of indicative of like how the game is. It's very no frills, but the shooting action in it is very, very good. It's very fun. It never feels unfair. It's not bullet hell. Like I said, everything is kind of dialed right to 12 o'clock, right to medium. In that sense, it's utterly inoffensive. I can't find one thing traditionally wrong with this game. However, you know, it may not stand out on anybody's list except people like me who look out for every single shmup that comes along.
True.
And if that's you, this is a must-have.
Cool. Seems like seven stages, seven bosses, $7.99. Is it worth it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a great shooter. And cool. I mean, you know, even if you're not particularly into shooters, but you want to play one, this is a good deal for the money. The only other thing I would recommend would be like, you know, one of the arcade classics that, you know, actual reissues of arcade games. But yeah, this feels right at home with those. So I would definitely recommend picking it up. And one last thing, it does have also, you know, almost to a point of cliche, is it does have the practice, time attack, and boss rush modes. So there you go.
Standard.
Yeah. Standard, but good. I like it.
All right. Next game to talk about is Unmetal, developed by Unepic Fran, published by Versus Evil, released September 28th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. You play as Jesse Fox, who finds himself imprisoned in a covert military base where he was arrested for a crime he didn't commit. Jesse must now escape using his dry wits, quick words, improvised skills, arsenal of warfare, violent explosives, MacGyvered gadgets, and an elaborate explanation of how it all went down. If that all fails, he'll use his fists. Pernell, how'd it go?
Well, I used my fists. Well, that was the worst voice version of David Hayter I've ever done today. So, what is Unmetal? Well, I came into this game expecting it to be like an open exploration Metal Gear type game. And while it wasn't that, what I got still proved to be a fantastic title that I'm going to recommend before even reviewing it proper. Like, it's good. So, this game takes place over 10 chapters, with each chapter being pretty much like a stage that you have to run around and explore. The actual exploration of the stages themselves do have very Metal Gear S5 to them. You'll be exploring jungles, military bases, underground bunkers, sewers. And as you're exploring, the idea is that you're trying to, like you mentioned earlier, your primary goal is to escape this facility. You were locked up for a crime you didn't commit. You're trying to get out. And the way you're going about doing this is as you explore the environments, you will come across guards, generally. But that's the primary enemies you'll come across. And when you see guards, your primary goal will be to either get by unseen or take them out. But not take them out in the murderous sense. Your primary desire is to knock them unconscious. Because even though you'll eventually get the means to kill, it's disincentivized for you to do so. Instead, you want to knock them out. So you walk up on them, hit them, beat them till they're unconscious, and that's good. Now, unlike something like Metal Gear, though, when you knock guys out, if you do so without them catching you, as in stealthily, you'll get an experience point. And for every certain number of experience points, your character levels up. And on the level up, you'll get to choose between two perks. Like, for example, one might say you can punch twice as fast, or you can run faster. So you have to choose which is more important to you, speed or murder speed, I guess. I don't know. So it would be things like that. And it kind of makes it cool in a sense that you're kind of slightly customizing your own game, because in my personal opinion, some of those upgrades are decent game changers. Like if you don't have the speed one, for example, I think that's a very important deal. Healing yourself faster, pretty damn important. Now, if you take a hit in this game, depending on almost every way that you get hit, mind you, you'll take damage. But in addition to that, you'll start to bleed. You'll bleed out. This results in you leaving a blood trail. So stealthily go bye-bye. But also, your health will deplete. There is a bandage item you can use that's a, you don't run out of this, infinite use, that you can use to kind of stop the bleeding. But it takes time to use, which is where the difficulty of using it comes in sometimes. Like, you might not be in a position where you can break that out. But if you do use it, you'll stop the bleeding, but it takes med kits to stop bleeding and also heal you over a period of time, which are limited. So, some specific elements that make this game particularly special, and the reason why I already love it so much, because if it was just the stuff I described before, it would be fun, but it wouldn't be, this game is great. The thing that actually makes it special to me is, one, the comedy. I love games that do comedy, but I primarily love the ones that do a good job of it, because believe it or not, it's not easy to do video game comedy. Well, that crap can come off ham-fisted, bland, boring, pedantic, and in some respects, damn right insulting. But this game is great with it. Like, I've outright laughed multiple times. Like, literally just, like, put the controllers, this is great. I am glad I am playing this. And the second thing is the reason for some of those laughs. One of the primary elements of the game is that the game is being told, is played as a past tense expression that Jesse Fox is giving to an interrogator, and then maybe some other fun elements to that too, which I won't spoil because I thought that was funny when that came up. But you're basically telling the story, which means what's happening is not fluid. It can, well, I guess it is fluid. It can move and as the story dictates. So every once in a while, you'll get like a scenario where it's like, so then what happened? The guy's like, well, you see, there was like these rats. He's like, how many rats? And the game's like, how many rats were there? You got to say how many there were. And that changes the experience. Like, if you say no rats, well, I'm assuming there was no rats, but I got cocky because I'm a brazen storyteller. There were tons of rats. So, of course, there were tons of rats. And for anyone playing this game, I recommend you say tons of rats, because what happened there was fucking hysterical. But it results in some hilarious lines and also even some dumb things that happen. Like, just to give you a general example, just to let you know how they do it. Like, early in the game, you know, you start out, you learn to punch stuff, right? And you go into your first, like, military office, and you're walking around. There's, like, a bunch of boxes sitting in the corner. And as I'm starting punching the boxes, like, I can't, but I want to try to break the box. And, of course, I couldn't, but I kept punching anyway. So, at this point, the game actually stops, and the narrator goes, why are you punching these boxes? And the guy's like, I've been locked up. I'm angry. I had to take it out on something, right? Like, they actually stop the game because they wrote in that he would ask you about why are you telling him the story and stating as, I just started punching boxes. Like, it's just, it made me laugh. And that's not the only time the game does stuff like that. It's fucking gold. As you finish levels, they'll give you, like, you know, a stage clear, and you'll get graded based on how many secrets you found. Secrets being, like, hidden rooms generally that hide hidden items. You know, like, for example, like, you might find an item that increases your hit point capacity so you can take more hits. But you basically, the game will rate you on how many of those secrets you found. It will also rate you on how many guys you stealthily knocked out. So if you're the type that goes for perfect clears, you'll be wanting to go back to visit old chapters to find all the secrets and stealthily take out all the guards. And in some respects, they kind of prove like little bits of child puzzles. Like, you do get items to help, but you can throw coins to distract enemies. Like, oh, shiny coin. The guy will walk up to the coin and knock him out. And you can pick up the body and drag it and hide it and all that cool stuff. But I got to say, though, like, this game, I had heard of it on Steam, didn't even know it was getting a console release until out of nowhere. And then the review code came through, and I am happy as a clam with this thing. Like, it's not Metal Gear. And if you're coming here for Metal Gear, you're not getting it. But it is a fantastic homage to Metal Gear that does his own comedic spin for it. The guy even sounds like David Hayter, like in a parody sense. Like, he sounds like that gruff snake voice. It's just good. I love this game. It's fantastic.
Well, $20 sounds like a buy it to me.
That's an absolute buy. It's a fuck it. You better.
That's not a review. We don't have that.
It is. I'm adding it today temporarily for this masterpiece. It is worth it. Get it. It's fun.
Maya or Purnell will fucking kill you.
Oh, no, I won't kill you. I don't have that kind of malice, but I will come to you and berate you for why you didn't buy this.
Buy it or Purnell will fucking cut you.
No, berate, which in some respects is worse than being cut.
You will emotionally cut them.
My soul, it burns.
If you refuse, I'll say something that will cut you like a knife.
Ouch, he's right.
Cut you like a spoon.
You know an Earthbound reference when you hear one.
Oh, God, yeah.
I miss Earthbound. I want Oddity to come out in 2027, whenever the fuck that's going to come out.
Yeah.
Anyway, next game to talk about is Don't Touch This Button, developed by Nine Eyes Game Studio, published by Rattlake Games, released September 24th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. 3D puzzle-solving game about movement, logic, fun, humor, and lies. Chris, tell us about Don't Touch This Button.
It is a lie.
Did you touch the button?
It's the first thing you do. They force
you motherfucker!
I know. But that's okay. It is a game about disobedience, so that's all right. Okay, so this is a first person. I want to call it a room puzzle game. Like, you know, you go from room to room, and you know something happens, and you know you gotta like figure out how to get to the next room, and so on and so forth. You know, if it was 2D, it would just like be like, you know, a room, like, you know, one screen would be a puzzle, and then go to the next screen and it's a puzzle, except in this one you're actually walking around. And it's pretty smooth, although not without its bugs, but that's okay. You go into, you're an unnamed person trying to do an unnamed thing in space, because you can see out the windows and it's all space everywhere you look. Okay, I want to get us we're gonna get copyright struck by the Full House people.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway.
Or Green Day.
Speaking of Full House.
Since they ripped off the Full House theme for, what was that song?
Oh, for what?
Green Day. How they ripped off the Full House theme song for one of their guitar solos.
That's really funny. I wasn't aware of that. I'm not a Green Day fan, but that sounds delightful. And I hope the Full House people go easy on them.
21 Guns, I think it was.
That's funny. Well, speaking of Full House, this house is full of lies. Because every time you go to a new room, the only instruction that you're given is just words on a computer screen. Well, kind of like a plasma TV, I guess. And those words are unequivocally false. They are lying to you, but figuring out how they're lying to you is where the fun lies. And so it's all about wandering around trying to find the button to push the you know next door open. And sometimes it's like, yeah, I really don't want to give any of the puzzles away because they're all pretty clever and they get much, you know, they get harder and harder. And but it's cool because you can get through like almost half the game like just on basic wits without having to like really think. And then they do bring out the thinkers and that's really cool. But yeah, it's like you know, it'll tell you something like, you know, I'm going to make up one. Okay. So this isn't actually, well, it might be kind of in the game, but anyways, it'll say like, you know, there'll be like vases everywhere and it'll be like, you know, just ignore the vases. And so that means you got to do something with the vases. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's like all about figuring out, you know, do I push it? Do I like pick up a vase? Do I, you know, there's actually not a lot you can do in the game. Like you can push things, you can pick up things. Those are mapped to buttons. And yeah, sometimes you can throw things, you know, into like a specific corner of the room or something like that, and that'll work. And the only thing that I kind of ran into sometimes is that if you pick up a thing, occasionally the wall will eat it. So you'll be like moving along with it, and then it'll just be not in your hands and not anywhere in the game anymore. So collision detection, you know. But that's okay, because every room, you know, you can just restart the room, and there's no penalty for doing that.
That's good.
And there's no penalty for dying either, and you'll do that a lot too, because there's a lot of floor spikes, and they'll be like, you know, push these buttons in order to avoid the spikes. And of course, if you do that, then the spikes will get you. So you have to figure out, oh, what do they actually mean? You know, what do I need to actually do? So like, it's pretty cool. It's one of those things. What's that floor puzzle game, or that room puzzle game, where it's like, it just slowly drives you mad like over time. I can't remember, but it was very popular for a time. It's not overly like, trying to be super clever or anything like that. Not like a Portal or that other game that I can't remember the name of now.
The Stanley Parable?
Stanley Parable. Thank you. That's exactly the one I was thinking of. And so it's not really like that. It's really just, here's some fun puzzles to do. And don't worry about the TV. It's lying to you. and I quite enjoyed it. It's a nice little way to, like, you know, sit back and enjoy some puzzles. I do like the first person aspect of it, because you can, it's nice to wander around a puzzle instead of just like having it all right there in front of you. And yeah, at no point did it get like insurmountable or just like unfair, like clicking, you know, random things until you until you win. Like, even some they'll be like, it'll say, like, the switch is out in the open. And then, of course, that means the switch is hidden and you have to find it. But, like, it's not, like, hidden behind a wall or a secret wall or anything like that. It's just, like, just go find it. Look around until you find it.
No, the best part about it is it's only $5. So what do you think?
Oh, yeah, for $5, this is absolutely worth it. It's, like, dang. I mean, you know, even if you just do a few rooms, it's going to be a nice way to, like, relax. You don't have to try too hard. But no, I do like this one. It's got a couple bugs, but that's okay. That's not a problem at all. And, you know, you'll probably want to listen to your own music while you're playing it too. But anyways, because it's more about, you know, environment than blowing you away with mind-blowingness.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Next game is Alpha Link, developed and published by Black Hive Media, released September 30th on Xbox One for $14.99. Alpha Link is a new multiplayer shooter based off the Kova Sci-Fi backstory. Compete in local or online PvP matches, talk to NPCs in the hub about lore and upcoming events, customize your character, and take part in the global faction leaderboard. Alpha Link will continuously live with new updates, giving fresh new features. Purnell, tell us about your time with Alpha Link.
Okay, so Alpha Link is a 2D arena combat shooter, where you play as a faceless gunner, who at the beginning of the game is made to choose a faction, and that faction is who you are representing on, as mentioned before, the leaderboards. So when you play the game, pretty much every match you're playing, whether it be local or online, is intended to ultimately boost the standing of your respective faction. The gameplay itself, however, works as such. There are a lot of different modes that exist in this game. It can be like basically capture points for a certain amount of time, so you'll get points for captured locations on the map. It could be one where you need to kill as many players as possible between rounds. Grab the minigun and kill people only with the minigun. There's a good number of different modes in the game. However, one hiccup that really pulled me out of it was how the gunplay works. And you'll get it when I say it. I mean, this may have been deliberate on the developer's part, but the idea behind this game is, as you're running around, here are your functions. You can either, you can jump, you can double jump, you can hit the trigger button or bumper, I can't remember which of the two, unless you do like an air dash. You can only dash forward though, so you can't like dash like upwards or diagonally like that. And you can fire your gun. However, gun firing works as such. On an Xbox One controller, you hold down the left trigger, which now allows you to aim your gun. You aim the gun with the left thumbstick, the same thumbstick you use to run. And then you need the right trigger to fire. if you didn't pick up on what my issue with the game is already from what I just stated, I'll spell it out plainly. This, I mean, again, this could be delivered on their part, and maybe this is, there's a market for it, I don't know, but Xbox One controllers have two analog sticks. I get that there's a saturated market for, you know, arena combat games, 2D or otherwise, but if you have two thumbsticks, why would you not have the right thumbstick be to aim? I mean, like, even if the idea is you don't want players to run around while, you know, while shooting their guns, I get that. But for some reason, when I was playing, my brain just did not want to turn off the idea that left thumbstick moves, right thumbstick aims for things. So when it came time to hit the left thumbstick, I had moments where I was like trying to aim with the right thumbstick and nothing happened because obviously you aim with the left thumbstick. But then that threw me off because I'm like, okay, well, I want to aim this direction, but I also want to start running again. It just didn't compute. Like, either the right thumbstick should always aim, or heaven forbid, just be like a run. You should better just run and aim the gun at the same time. But
yeah, I was not a fan of the whole having to stop, aim, shoot. I mean, you could still aim and shoot while falling, which was handy. You could move that way and shoot, but like, I really, really needed this to be a twin stick shooter instead of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was, like you said, if that was intentional on their design and how they want it to play. It just seems like it would feel and play so much better if it was a standard twin stick shooter. I just don't know if that's what they wanted.
Agreed. And then there's another element too that I'm like, was this deliberate? I don't know. Which is that at the beginning of there's only four stages, but that can get over that because usually companies will add new stages and stuff. But on every stage, you spawn at the exact same spot every time. And if you die, and it's one of the modes where you can live and die multiple times, like, say, for example, the minigun level or things like that, you'll still spawn in the same spot. So you could literally have someone with a minigun standing over your spawn point. It's like, brr, 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 and just like killing you every time you come back, so long as another player doesn't disrupt it. Like,
want to hear how I did in that minigun game?
Tell me more.
I got the minigun. I aimed it down towards where the guys were. I shot them, and then I just left it where it was, shooting in the one diagonal position. Nothing was hitting me. None of the environmental things were hitting me. Nobody was shooting me. They would just spawn and jump right into the bullets. I got 55 kills.
Damn.
And one death.
And that just goes to show you, like, and on one hand, I get, yeah, someone can be hearing this and go, well, yes, the AI, guys. Of course the AI is stupid. Which, admittedly, AI shouldn't be stupid
because the AI it's nice that the AI is dumb. It could be a little bit smarter, but I'm sure that's something that could be adjusted. My biggest concern with this is just how it controls.
Controller's a roughing. Like, it to me, that makes it really bad. Cause like, but it's like, but to me, I think it's that and the spawning, because even if they fix the controls, in a human match, that would get exploited the high holy hell. There's no denying that. So that would I feel like that needs to get tweaked. I mean, and I can't imagine that being tough for them. If they designed this entire game, that would have to be like a small potato fix.
And to my knowledge, this was a product that was basically a COVID quarantine lockdown project that a husband and wife or a partnership completed in basically like a year and a half, which is impressive as fuck.
Oh, yeah, because admittedly, the game at its core is not, I mean, it works at a base level. Like, I mean, it's a very functional game. I've had no crashes or anything. It has the incentive elements of, as you play, you level up your character through experience, whether just from winning matches or boosting your faction. And when you get currency and level up, you can use the currency to buy unlocked cosmetic gear for your character to make him a little less faceless. He becomes your faceless character.
Yeah.
But it's just that gameplay element. If they fix that, I feel, I think it would have a lot more draw. I've never met a person out there that would tell me, you know what I miss? gun games where you stop to shoot with the same thumbstick you're using to run. I miss this kind of game. I mean, like, survival horrors, yeah, there are people who go, you know what, I miss tank controls, in which case those people are crazy, by the way. But
they are.
They do exist. But I've never heard anybody that says this. This is like GoldenEye if it were 2D. You had to aim with the, oh, Christ, I'm just making up things because I just can't. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, the only other real issue I had with the game is the text size. Like, when the rounds start in the loading, they give you information on what you're going to have to do during the battle. I'm playing on the Series X, so the load times are, like, super fast, and I don't always get to see what the hell I'm supposed to be doing during matches, but it pops up in the bottom corner in incredibly small font, and it is very difficult to read and know what you're supposed to be doing during a match. I thought I did great during the one match. I got 25 kills and I didn't die at all. I had to collect points from a fucking beacon somewhere. I lost. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue. I just thought I had the most kills.
You still had 25 points. You still had 25 points. That's the funny part.
No, I had 25 kills, not points. I had zero points.
But hey, murder spree.
It needs to be more clear on what you're doing. It has to be more out, like, just bigger fonts. Let me know what I'm supposed to be doing. Be more clear on what I have to do in the round. If I'm not supposed to just be killing the opponent, if there's a certain goal I have to do. And then the controls, just again, we can't get over the controls. Just give us twin stick controls. Carnage in chat is saying, I wish it was twin stick controls. We wish it was twin stick. Make this game twin stick, and I am ready to dive back in and play this a whole lot more. It is so weird to stop and shoot and aim with the one stick.
If you think about it, if they really felt like they loved that concept, given all the different modes this game has for matches, they could just make it a mode of a match type, like stand and shoot or something. Like, you can't run and gun, be strategic, you know? I mean, they could do that.
Well, but as it stands, $15, what are your thoughts on Alpha Link?
I am, with our grading system, I am unfortunately going to have to go with a deny. Until some changes get made, I can't direct someone to pay money for this yet. But if they add the twin stick element to it, I could totally at least go with a try, because there's fun to be had here for sure. But as it is, it's more frustrating than it is fun.
I can somewhat agree with that. I would still give it like a hesitant try it, because you might still click with the gameplay. It's still a fun game once you get into it. It's just knowing what to do and if your brain can work with the antiquated control scheme.
Aye.
Yeah.
Carnage, right. What do you think?
Carnage, what do you think? Yeah, Carnage, what do you think? Tell us. We're going to sit here and wait until you tell us. We're just going to sit here and do nothing. I ain't going to do shit, Carnage, until you tell us what you thought about fucking Alpha Link. Just, I'm waiting. Similar thoughts. Want the twin stick controls, please. There we go. All right. Next up, we got a pair of Zetalon games to talk about. The first one is Shiro, developed by Game Dynasty, published by Zetalon, released September 28th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $4.99 each. Halo, Hollow and Shiro. Is it Hollow?
Hollow!
I guess.
Hollow, okay. It had the red squiggly line. I couldn't tell if it was an A or an O. Hollow and Shiro are twin sisters who travel the world since childhood in search of adventure. Once they were attacked by the evil witch Satella and took Shiro to her gloomy cave, now Hollow has to find his sister. Help Hollow find her sister. Wait, what? Help Hollow?
I think they're both her. I think they're both sisters.
Anyway, overcome a dense forest, an ancient temple, dangerous dungeons, and destroy enemies in this pixelated adventure platformer. Chris, tell us about Shiro.
Okay, so Shiro. Well, that's the story. He actually started off like kind of doing this, they have like this hot air balloon, like airship kind of thing. And he actually started off doing like kind of a very simple, like shmup, like stage. But once you run into the boss, turns out the boss is actually the big bad guy for the game, and they kidnap your sister. And so you land in a forest, and the game then becomes a, side-scrolling kind of puzzle game platformer. So it's basically like a ninja style game. In fact, Ninja Striker really reminds me of that, because it's one of those things where like you kind of bounce off of enemies as you strike them with your sword, and it kind of creates this like nice kind of way to like kind of attack them and kind of juggle attacks so that you can stun lock them and things like that. Pretty cool. The game is really nice looking. It has like really good like multi-frame movements, which I like, you know, a nice sweep of the hair or the cape or something like that as you move.
Nice animations in the game.
Yeah. Animation. I was actually, when I heard Zetalon, I was like, I wasn't expecting quality animation anyways.
Well, Zetalon's just the publisher. It comes down to the developer.
Yeah, exactly. It comes down to the developer, and they got a good one for this one. But it, yeah, it's largely like, you know, fighting enemies. Of course, in this Dark Souls age, we have a roll, thing that makes you temporarily kind of invincible and allows you to dodge the enemy strikes, which is good because it's also one hit kills, just like Dark Souls. No, that's only in spirit. But anyway, yeah, in this game though, it is literally true that you will die every single hit. However, just about every like 3 feet, they have a checkpoint. So it's one of those kind of games where, you know,
it's very forgiving.
If this was like an old game you were playing on an emulator, you would be like save stating all the time so you could get past the hard parts. Well, this game does it for you. That's just baked right in. But no, it's like it's pretty slick. Like I said, it looks good. It sounds good. A lot of it, it's very much split between like standard action of like, you know, fighting increasingly tough enemies and, you know, skeletons that are filled with like purple goop for some reason. Like when you hit skeletons, they explode as if bleeding, and it's just like mutagen. It's like, I don't know. I don't understand what's going on there, like canonically, but it's pretty cool and I'm into it. But a lot of it is actually a little bit more like Donkey Kong Country style, like platform puzzling. That is to say, there are these symbols that you can basically, if you touch them when you're jumping and hold down the jump button, then they will kind of hold you there. And then you can choose a direction sometimes to like kind of fling yourself. And then so you have a lot of puzzles where you're just like kind of using those things to fling yourself in a way that doesn't land you on some spikes or something.
Like the barrel puzzles from Donkey Kong.
It is exactly the barrel puzzles from Donkey Kong Country. Yeah. But they're not infuriating. So that's nice. You know, they're passable. Not passable like medium quality. I just mean like you can pass them because they're not
completable.
They're completable. It's playable. This game is playable. A lot of it is like trying to find keys to unlock doors and stuff. So it's exploration based. But as far as I played, I didn't detect any like Metroidvania aspects. Like there's not a lot of, you know, you need to unlock the double jump so you can get to this area of the map. You know, a lot of it, once you get to a certain part of the map,
it's fairly linear.
It's linear, but there are also branching paths and stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, once you get, if you decide to, you're going this way, then that's the way you decided to go. You're not going back. So, this game was pretty thoroughly enjoyable. It wasn't like a world beater or anything like that. But I mean, in this age of like, throwback retro nouveau, let's call them, the Shovel Knight era, it's nice to see games like this coming in at like, you know, from this budget minded of a publisher. So
cool. So $5, your official verdict?
Yeah, this is easily $5. I mean, I can't think of anything that would not recommend this game for that price.
Cool.
If they double or triple the price down the line, then I may say think about it. But
in essence, you could double the price because you have to buy it separately on Xbox and Windows 10 if you want the two achievement lists.
Oh, I see. Okay,
that's up to you if you want to double dip or not.
I didn't check the achievement list, but it doesn't look like these are just gimme achievements.
No, this is not a gimme list at all. You got to earn this one.
I only picked a couple, or I only achieved a couple of them through normal, not looking at it kind of gameplay.
Yeah, you got to actually like complete the game and find all the birds and.
All right. Oh
and
man,
I think I missed a bird too, so I'm pissed.
One thing that I did find one thing to complain about. It's a choice they made. It's not a weakness, and that's that you can accidentally kill bunny rabbits if you're swinging your sword to willy nilly. If a rabbit gets in your way, you might actually murder it, and that's bad.
Is it?
I mean, you know, depending on how you feel about bunnies, I guess.
Because I thought they were coming after me, and I killed all of them.
It's coming straight for us.
I don't trust bunnies in games after, you know, some of the shit that we've played that has like a cute little adorable bunny. It's like, oh my god, it's attacking me.
Honestly, the funny thing about that is like you made a couple of comments in the game that reminded me of an anime called Ray Zero, including the name Satella. And now you're talking about bunnies, which if you've not seen the show, there is like a freaking traumatic scene there involving killer rabbits, So I was like, all this is lighting up where I'm just like, yeah, fuck rabbits. Fucking murderous bastards. Like, they don't fuck with rabbits. So you're on the right page.
Anyway, we got one final game to talk about tonight. Final game to talk about tonight is called Obscurity, developed by Game Dynasty, published by Zetalon, released September 28th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $4.99 each. Obscurity, atmospheric action with puzzles and two playable characters. The story tells about the fate of a knight exiled and a young treasure seeker, one interconnecting tale of suffering and sacrifice. Chris, tell us about this one.
Alrighty, well, once again, we're dealing with a quality 8-bit like throwback type of game. However, this one is a top-down slashy action typey gamey. In one aspect, there's actually so the game basically starts off establishing that this lady who likes to treasure hunt, basically wearing street clothes and carrying no gear. I don't know what her deal is, but anyways, so she is out treasure hunting and, she is, I suppose, kind of joined at the astral hip, that is to say, by this kind of alien extra dimensional sort of ninja knight kind of character, just like, you know, a typical anime badass. And, so you can freely select between these characters, you know, it's very much like a Castlevania Portrait of Ruin thing. It's like, Charlotte, Jonathan, Charlotte, Charlotte, Jonathan, you know, that kind of thing. And the badass's job is to attack things and kill them, and the lady's job is to solve puzzles. So that's kind of how that goes. And yeah, you basically are trying to wander around these like different locations conveniently attached to a hub town. Where storyline happens, and I'm not sure if there's a lot of purchasing that goes on or anything, or like, you know, I guess I didn't get far enough to like unlock anything. Basically, when you find a shopkeeper, she yells at him for giving her bad directions to a treasure, because that's kind of how you get into the mess that you're in. But yeah, the idea is that you are supposed to close up all these portals and all these stages in order to banish a great evil. So yeah, it's a lot of it is just like wandering around with the knight character and slashing things until they're dead, and then, you know, you get to a closed door and it's up to the lady to open it. and the puzzles, they're pretty good. They kind of start off with things like a certain symbol will be like spinning really quickly, and you have to match it up with one of the stationary symbols that are kind of outside of it. Like a really fast clock or something like that. And if you get it wrong, of course, then you have to start over. But, you know, it's like different little things like that. It was nothing like especially hard, but I didn't play like super far into this one. So, you know, maybe there are really hard puzzles later. The action is hard enough, though, because while, you know, it's basically health refills are very few and far between in this game. Your character, of course, can take damage from enemies who tend to favor really cheap shots. And, you know, of course, if you die, then you have to start the whole stage over from the portal. So there's not a whole lot of checkpoints either. Well, no, there are actually checkpoints though. Like, but sometimes it can be a bit far until you find one, and sometimes the enemies get a little tough. And there are ways, like there's certain points where you can restore your life at the cost of like almost like just a hugely amount of increasing amount of souls that you get as enemy drops. So it's basically like money. And like, you know, you might have like 1,000 by the time you get to one of these stations where you can refill your stuff. And so it's like the first block of life to restore would be like 300. And then the second one's like 600 and, you know, so forth. And sometimes you can break boxes and find health like that. But I mean, it really, you know, it's not worth it to try and, you know, fast and furious your way through the action segments. You actually have to employ a lot of strategy. Pretty deep, actually, and fairly challenging. I have yet to be really, you know, at a standstill because of any of the puzzles and stuff. But I don't know. Maybe I'm a genius.
Well, it's $5. What do you think?
Again, great game for $5. It's you know, inexplicable almost. But so I would say
it's,
yes.
It's the same like, developer as Shiro. It's same developer, same publisher. Good. So Game Dynasty and Xenlon, back-to-back winners here, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's damn, what a team. I mean, charge more money. No, just kidding.
shut your mouth.
I mean, I like Shiro more of the two of them because that's just more my type of game. But yeah, if you are into like a challenging, you know, Zelda-esque type of affair, only, you know, kind of more exploring the dark side, this game's great too and well worth your $5, you know, go check it out.
Cool. All right. Well, we are finished. That is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks to you two for not only being here for the reviews, but for chatting to David Ventura with me. That was a fun chat all around. Backbeat is going to be on the,
That was a pleasure.
Aw, that's adorable. You're lying, but that's adorable. it's never a pleasure being with me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, come on.
Backbeat is going to be on the Steam Next Fest. Check out the demo, and then we will have more information on when it is launching. When we know more, and I'm sure David will be back on to chat with us. Another thanks to Tim for coming on doing his review. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
We got nothing, people. Nothing.